wishing you and yours a safe and happy holiday.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Michael Stinson in Los Angeles.
It doesn't matter if you're naughty or nice. If you're a prisoner in Arkansas, you will receive a gift this Christmas. Prison officials will give each of the 13,500 inmates in the state two apples, two oranges, as well as $5 on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day in a bid to make life a bit brighter for those behind bars over the holidays. The $70,000 cost for the program is paid for by prison vending machine profits and from rebates the system receives on long-distance calls placed by the inmates. The fresh fruit is donated from various U.S. orchards. For security reasons, the prison system forbids inmates' friends and relatives from sending gifts to prisoners at any time of the year, except for gift packages purchased through prison commissaries. Labor unions in the Czech Republic demanded Monday that stores stop playing Christmas carols incessantly or pay compensation for causing emotional trauma to the sales clerks. Some stores here play the same songs all day long and play them loudly. Employees say shifts have become unbearable. To listen to it for 8 hours a day is not healthy, that's for sure, said Alexander Lanier, a union leader. And for the customers, it's almost unbearable as well. Lanier said unions have written to major chains such as Tesco and demanded that employees be compensated. He said the unions want 500 koruna, U.S. $19, or 2 days off as a possible compensation. They've received no response. Unions in neighboring Austria have lodged similar complaints against stores there. Forget turkey and mince pies. This Christmas, Australians are being urged to serve native foods such as smoked kangaroo with wild lime and brandy sauce and wattle seed pavlova. Despite an abundance of unique fruits, nuts, and meat that have sustained the country's original Aboriginal inhabitants for centuries, Australians are only now embracing native food, with some supermarkets starting to stock indigenous produce this year. The step to the mainstream has inspired campaigners who have struggled to get indigenous foods onto the nation's dining tables and destroy the image of native food as simply juicy fat wachetti grubs, protein-rich bog-ong moss, and honey ants. More news after this.
I'm Oscar Davis. You may have a serious eye condition and not even know it. Vision loss is not a normal part of aging. Some vision changes are normal. Some are due to eye disease. Do you know the difference? Open your eyes to the facts. To get more information about vision and aging, or find out about what help is available if you're having vision problems, call Lighthouse International at 1-800-829-0500 or visit www.lighthouse.org.
Holiday gift giving isn't just for people anymore, not when they can choose from the latest bling bling for their pets too. The Wall Street Journal reports Ralph Lauren is pitching Fair Isle sweaters and polo shirts for dogs. Owners can buy sterling silver pet tags from Tiffany. Kosher Pets of Fort Lauderdale, Florida offers Hanukkah collars, stuffed dreidels, and even kosher dog biscuits. Some pet owners try to get their animals into the spirit of the season, but it doesn't always work. Ken Boschert of Washington University in Seattle says his dachshunds hate it when his wife puts the antlers on them. This is Michael Stinson in Los Angeles.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
The house needs painting, the kids need braces, and your car just died. Looks like you need a loan. But will you get it? It all depends on what lenders see in your credit report, which is why you should check out freecreditreport.com. Log on, and we'll show you how to find out online what's in your credit report and whether everything's accurate. Don't delay. See your credit report instantly. Make sure your credit's ready when you need it with freecreditreport.com.
Here's a novel concept. If you work full-time and do a good job, you shouldn't be paid so poorly that you live in poverty. Try to tell that to the federal government, though. An independent study released by Acorn, the grassroots advocate for the working poor, finds that corporations enjoying fat, tax-paid contracts from the feds are paying poverty wages to the people actually doing the contract work. The same federal government that sets precise standards for, say, the tensile strength of screws that it buys, sets no standards for the fair pay of people working under its contracts. The study, conducted by the Economic Policy Institute, revealed that 11% of federal contract employees receive less than a living wage, which is to say, their paychecks are too low to lift them and their families above the poverty level. In this period of economic prosperity and federal surpluses, in this period when Congress annually raises its own pay, in this period when federal contracts routinely cover the million-dollar paychecks of the corporate CEOs getting the contracts, it's absurd that our tax dollars would be used to subsidize sub-poverty pay. Ironically, while the companies profit on the backs of these workers, many of the workers themselves have to turn to food stamps, housing assistance, and other federal poverty programs just to make ends meet. This means that we taxpayers are hit with a double whammy. First, we're subsidizing low-wage companies. Then, we have to provide services to assuage the poverty of their workers. This is Jim Hightower saying, better that the contractors themselves be required to pay fair wages from the start. Which is why the Living Wage Responsibility Act has been introduced in Congress, sponsored by Representative Luis Gutierrez of Illinois. It requires big businesses that get federal contracts to pay their employees a wage no less than the federal poverty level. For more information, contact ACORN, 202-547-2500.
Hi, this is Suzanne Cowardy.
I'm El Bracciotti, the famous mariachi.
Whatever.
This is Renee Scarponi.
Hey, baby.
This is Kim Kasnick.
Yeah, baby.
This is John Lucas.
Hey. This is Stephanie Stryker.
Yeah, bud.
This is Steve Damshire.
This is Shar Jones.
This is Bill Vellner.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Ron Metzinger.
From our family to yours, have a
happy holiday and a great new year.
Isn't that just too cute?
I like Santa Claus.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Greetings, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. This is Tom Hartman broadcasting live coast to coast on the IE America Radio Network, streaming from the depths of outer space on Sirius Satellite Radio System, Stream 145, and beaming around the planet on radiopower.org. Live365.com and IEAmericaRadio.com with archives at WhiteRoseSociety.org. You can find it all at TomHartman.com. Where you can also drop into our chat room, which already is filling up with folks. It's the Christmas holiday here. It's the today is Christmas Eve, and we're going to do a little what's naughty and what's nice. But you know, I want to put it in context. This program, we're calling for return to the old values that made America great, the values that this country was founded on. That's where corporations had to answer to the people and couldn't buy off politicians. You know, it used to be a felony for corporations to lobby. It was called bribery and influencing. Where fair play wasn't a code phrase for the rich getting more and working and middle management people getting less. Where there was a social contract, and everybody understood it. I mean, you go back and you listen to the speeches that Franklin Roosevelt gave, even up until the era of Jack Kennedy and Lyndon Johnson, people understood that there was a social contract in America and in all of the democracies of the world. That, and it's not just about, oh, well, let's just throw some money at welfare mothers. No, what it is that people's basic needs are taken care of because that's what you do in a community, in a nation that's founded on justice and fairness, not on materialism and greed. And the most effective of those programs is a living wage, is guaranteeing people a living wage. And there is no such thing as an absolutely free market. Businesses exist because government authorizes them, and they exist on a matrix that is put there by government. That is to say, they use the currency that the government authorizes. They use the banking system that the government allows to exist. That they have contract law between corporations. They can engage in business, and those contracts are enforced with a court system that you and I pay for with our tax dollars. which is why it's entire, and they're using a workforce that is educated at our expense, and they're using the public streets for people to get to work, and they're using the right-of-ways to get their power system and their water and their sewage and all these things, and that's why it's appropriate that corporations be paying income taxes. Although, obviously, Halliburton doesn't think that, you know, reincorporating their divisions in the Caymans so they can avoid paying taxes. But it's just, this is a core issue where people can work to get ahead. I mean, that's the best welfare program is guaranteeing people, if they're working, they're getting a reasonable wage. But at the same time, we don't leave people starving in the streets, because there are some people who simply can't work. And you can go back to, in 1779, Thomas Jefferson introduced a bill to provide for the poor. Now, this is nothing that new, and it's not something that LBJ started. America has always been grounded in an understanding of on the one hand, we want to make sure that people have opportunity and can get ahead if they are able. And that if somebody is willing to spend their life working, even in the service of others, even in, you know, working for somebody else's business, that work is going to be appropriately compensated so that they can have a decent life in this country. And that those who cannot care for themselves and have nobody to care for them, we will collectively take care of, because it simply improves the quality of our own lives. It's really the ultimate selfishness. So anyhow, the eternal question of this program is, are we advancing democracy or are we advancing corporatism? And today, you know, it being the day before Christmas, we're gonna do some naughty and nice stuff. I want to go through who has been naughty and who has been nice with the old Santa Claus is coming to town song. Remember that? Yes, indeed. And he's making a list and checking it twice. Who's been nice? Well, among the folks who have been nice, actually, we'll do the naughty first. The AARP, for abandoning its commitment to the nation's senior citizens and its dues-paying members. I mean, this is a marvelous example, what the AARP does, the American Association of Retired Persons. Their CEO, William Novelli, was director of the ad agency. Yeah, the founder of the ad agency, Novelli and somebody or other, that did the Harry and Louise ads. You remember those? That just blew the Bill Clinton attempt at Medicare reform. Well, it wasn't Medicare. I mean, it was an entire health system reform program out of the water. It was his ad agency that put that thing together. And this guy, you know, right-wing crank has made his way up to the top of... Well, I shouldn't call him a crank. I don't know. He's probably a very decent person. You know what's amazing is I am absolutely convinced that everybody, even Ann Coulter, believes that they're doing the right thing. It's very rare that you encounter somebody who just knows that they are in every dimension of their life doing the wrong thing and can survive. I mean, people like that tend to go down in flames pretty quickly. And I'm sure he's got some rationale and rationalizations for what he's doing. But the bottom line is that AARP, which, you know, a nonprofit organization, which has built a reputation of being an advocacy group for seniors, has instead, under William Novelli's management, become an advocacy group for the nation's largest corporations, in particular the insurance corporations, who are going to make out like bandits with this Medicaid bill, which AARP spent $7 million advertising all across the United States. And now we have, for example, this AP story. Senior citizens angry over AARP's endorsement of the Medicare bill are ripping up and burning their AARP membership cards and flooding the lobbying group's internet message board with complaints in what could be the biggest revolt in its ranks since the 1980s. And Isaac Ben Ezra, president of the Massachusetts Senior Action Council, said he led a demonstration of about 40 people against the bill in Massachusetts. He said the bill destroys one of the most successful programs in the history of this country. And it is. It is the beginning of the dismantling of that, you know, of the Medicare dimension of the broad Social Security. I mean, Medicare and Social Security are separate programs, but they come under the same philosophical umbrella, which is that we take care of ourselves. There's this thing called the commons. The commons in this case is Well, first of all, what are the commons? There are all the public streets, the police department, the fire department. There are things that we own in common. The common, you know, that's why states are called commonwealths. I mentioned this yesterday. And these things that we own in common are the things, generally we decide they're the things that are critical to life. We decide in a democracy that there are some things that are too important to us because our survival depends on them, to put into the hands of people who can then use them to squeeze us for profit. It's why up until the Reagan Revolution, the vast majority of hospitals in the United States, and it may well have been all of them, I believe the laws were state by state, so I can't say absolutely, but in every state I ever lived in, and I've lived in four, that the hospitals were all nonprofits. They were required by law to be nonprofits. Because nobody wanted a for-profit corporation to have their hands around the throat of our healthcare system. Well, Bill Frist, I mean, you know, when they started legalizing profit corporations moving into the hospital business, that's how Bill Frist's family made their hundreds of millions. The head of the Republican head of the Senate, a former physician. So, anyhow, we have these nonprofits like AARP that are supposed to, that have put themselves forward as advocating for the commons, advocating for their constituents. But the bottom line is that nonprofits won't save our commons any more than for-profits will. And, you know, this is the big myth. I mean, corporations are running all these ads. It's called greenwashing. They're saying, look at all this wonderful work that we're doing. You know, tobacco actually will kill you. We're telling you about it. Or, you know, we're helping, you know, we're giving money to help educate kids about the dangers of alcohol. And these kind of things. Corporations aren't going to save the commons. The Supreme Court has ruled that if an officer in a corporation does anything that doesn't enhance corporate profits, that person has, quote, failed in their fiduciary responsibility, end quote, which is a crime. And it's therefore... corporations, when they do what looks like altruism, it's really advertising wrapped in the appearance of altruism, and it's not it. The only way that we can protect our commons is by having institutions that we own, not that we can become members of like the AARP, but that we own, and that we elect the people who run them. And we can pull those people back by not electing them, by choosing to vote against them. And that's called government in a democracy. You know, it's just amazing to hear cons rant and rail against government as if this was the Soviet Union. It's not. We have a democracy here, not a dictatorship. So anyhow, the naughty was the AARP. The nice is MoveOn.org. MoveOn.org has done some just extraordinary stuff. In talking about nonprofit organizations, it's done some just extraordinary stuff in the last year, and a year and a half or so since they just kind of came out of nowhere. And we had Eli on the program a while ago, one of the founders of MoveOn.org. And here's one of their ads, just one of the ads that they've run. It's just great. Just
we could have built 10,000 new schools or hired almost 2 million new teachers. We could have rebuilt our electric grid. We could have insured more of our children. Instead, George Bush wants to spend that $87 billion in Iraq. If there's money for Iraq, why isn't there money for America? The truth is, we're not being led. We're being misled.
Yeah, powerful ads. So, our naughty and nice AARP and MoveOn.org in the category of nonprofit organizations. And MoveOn.org, of course, is www.moveon.org if you want to go check them out. And AARP is www.aarp.org if you want to let them know what you think about them. And it's a little problematic. Nice in the category of troops. Nice are U.S. troops. The named Times Person of the Year. Congratulations for uncommon skills and service for the choice each one of them has made, and each one's and the ones still ahead for the challenge of defending not only our freedoms but those barely stirring half a world away, as Time Magazine says. Naughty, the Bush administration for trying to roll back the imminent danger pay from $225 to $150, and the family's separation allowance from $250 to $100 for our American troops. Naughty and nice U.S. troops. Stay tuned. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. We'll be back.
Oh, Randy, it was a mistake bringing you to the Texas Yodel Off.
Prilosec, Odal OTC.
Oh, boy. Well, at least we've helped lots of frequent heartburn sufferers with new Prilosec OTC, that one pill a day.
It little pill-io.
For 24 hours of zero heartburn.
One whole day.
Oh, it's possible with Prilosec OTC, and it starts working the very first day.
Hee-haw.
Now, if you could just stop that yodeling.
Prilosec, Odal OTC.
Use as directed for 14 days for frequent heartburn.
My name is Kathy, and I met my husband Michael at eHarmony.com.
My name is Gina, and I met my husband Tom through eHarmony.com.
My name's Jennifer, and I met my husband Jack on eHarmony.com.
Hi, I'm Dr. Neil Clark Warren, founder of eHarmony.com. These are just a few of the hundreds of eHarmony marriages. Dating services give you a picture in a paragraph. We go a lot deeper. We start with a personality profile that features 29 dimensions of compatibility, crucial to a long-term relationship. And if you go to eHarmony.com right now, we'll give you this $40 profile free. And then we'll find you a soulmate based on compatibility in the most important areas of life. Visit eHarmony.com today. Get your free personality profile.
My name is Becky, and I met my husband, Tom, on eHarmony.com.
A lot of happy guys out there tonight, thanks to eHarmony.com.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Hey, Jim, how you doing?
I'm tired of this crappy job.
What? I thought you loved this job. You have a company car. You even have a expense account. What's the problem?
I have to listen to all this junk radio, and I miss all my favorite political talk shows like Tom Hartman and Peter B. Collins, because I have to beat a stupid job.
Why don't you listen to it on your computer like me?
Because for some stupid reason, I have to pay attention to what's going on at work or something like that. I don't remember. I wasn't listening. All I know is that I'm pretty cranky when I miss my shows.
You think?
I should just go over there and tell him that I'm not coming to work until I listen to my shows, and if he's got a problem with it, then we can go outside, punk.
Hold on there. Just listen to the best in political talk on Sundays.
The what?
The best in political talk on Sundays from 10 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time. You can hear the best of Tom Hartman and Peter B. Collins.
Really? Well, that's better than picking a fight with the boss.
Yeah, you'll keep your job and your health.
What? You don't think I can take him?
He's big, dude.
I would waste him.
Yeah, right.
That's the best of political talk Sunday nights from 10 to midnight Eastern Time on the IE America Radio Network.
Do you dig your dog, but your dog digs your rose bushes?
Does Hole in the Head have your Oscar?
Is your cat doing a Tarzan swing from your drapes?
Is your python pooped?
Do you hate your folks because they spent your college tuition on a European vacation?
Jamie, what does that have to do with Anna?
I don't know. I kind of ran out of stuff.
Now, come on. This is a commercial for a major radio network. We can do better.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights, on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
It's a Kwanzaa celebration. Honor elders from the family tree. If not for them, there'd be no you and me receiving glory from above.
Kwanzaa celebration. Come together with your family. Paying tribute to our history with the harvest of our love.
And welcome back. Happy Kwanzaa. Happy Hanukkah. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. And Shelby at radiopower.org, this great organization that streams our program on the web to nearly 100 countries so far, and my understanding is well over 10,000 people. She sent me this thing this morning, Why Christmas Should Be More Commercial, from the Ayn Rand Institute, which gets us to our naughty and nice think tanks. But before I get to this, let me just share with you this quick little little clip from it that adbusters.org put together that kind of puts this into perspective.
The average North American consumes 5 times more than a Mexican, 10 times more than a Chinese person, and 30 times more than a person from India. We are the most voracious consumers in the world. A world that could die because of the way we North Americans live.
And so in response, the Ayn Rand Institute says, Why Christmas Should Be More Commercial. Contrary to lore, this holiday was established by Americans to celebrate worldly goods and happiness. It was taken over by Christianity. Yes, that's, of course, why it's called Christmas. Christmas is by Leonard Pykoff. Christmas in America is an exuberant display of human ingenuity, capitalist productivity, and the enjoyment of life. Yet all of these are castigated as materialistic. The real meaning of the holiday, we are told, is assorted nativity tales and altruist injunctions like love thy neighbor that no one takes seriously. Well, I would suggest that Leonard has missed something in one of those critical developmental phases or something. He goes on, he wraps this thing up. America's tragedy is that its intellectual leaders have repeatedly tried to replace happiness with guilt by insisting that the spiritual meaning of Christmas is religion and self-sacrifice for Tiny Tim or his equivalent. Well, you know, Christmas is not about guilt for me. Just the whole holiday season. Sorry, Leonard, but I think most people who have some sense of celebration of Christmas do it for very positive reasons. For us, it's a time that all our children come home and we get together with them, so it's a time of family. I mean, it's a time of, just an anchoring to a tradition. It's for those who find the religious dimension of it meaningful. It's not about self-flagellation and guilt. It's about connecting with a mystical experience, something larger than you, something that's meaningful. It's about love. It's these are positive values. But the Ayn Rand Institute says, but the spiritual must start with recognizing reality. Life requires reason, selfishness, capitalism. That is what Christmas should celebrate. Off it goes. And on the other hand, the positive think tanks. Oh, and the other downer think tank, the Heritage Foundation's townhall.com. I'll give you the positive ones after the break. But here, get this. This is Kathleen Parker runs this op-ed piece in the Heritage Foundation's website, quoting a letter that she got. She says, these bastards like Clark and Kerry and that incipient-ass Dean and Gephardt and Kucinich and that absolute mental midget Sharpton race baiter should all be lined up and shot. I mean, this is the quality of the discourse we're getting out of the conservative think tanks. It's really, I think, frankly, rather tragic, this and the whole kind of culturism of America. I'll have something to read to you a little later on that I think is just amazing in that context, or share with you. And the positive think tanks, I'll tell you about when we come right back from this break. Stay tuned. This is Tom Harpin on the IE America Radio Network. We'll be back in a moment.
Thank you. Didn't think you could still get union-made clothing in America? Well, think again. It's here, now, and just a mouse click away at www.nosweatshop.com, the world's first shopping mall that doesn't sell clothing made in sweatshops. At nosweatshop.com, there's jeans and oxfords, sweats and hoodies, fleece jackets and sports bras, caps, scarves, and more. You can get great quality, support good jobs, and pay a fair price. You can't stretch a buck any further than that. Nosweatshop.com. A better world is just a mouse click away.
Hi, this is Suzanne Gowardy, the General Manager of the IE America Radio Network, wishing you and yours a safe and happy holiday.
The winter homes of migratory birds have a big impact on their well-being the next summer. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. A lot of migratory birds that spend the summer in North America are now in tropical regions keeping warm. Their long-term survival depends on having places to call home at both ends of their range. But the winter habitat of some birds has been logged or converted to pastures for cattle. Researchers say these birds might be able to find new places to live, but they'll have a harder time finding the food they need to keep healthy. Peter Mara is an ecologist with the Smithsonian Environmental Research Center in Maryland. He studied one migratory bird, the redstart, that spends the winter in Central America and on Caribbean islands. Some of the birds lived in prime habitat in mangrove swamps. Others were forced to live in less desirable habitat that was dry and scrubby. Mara says birds that spent the winter in the mangroves weighed more and produced more chicks the following summer. Mara says older male birds dominate the better habitats, and they push out females and younger males. Under normal conditions, that gives them better food in the winter and an advantage in the spring. They can start their migrations earlier and stake out prime habitat for breeding when they get home. But the natural competitiveness of the older male birds might be hard on females if they can't find enough food in the winter. And if fewer females survive the winter, the result will be more males than females in the spring, and ultimately fewer offspring.
So if males are continuing to dominate and exclude females into the poorer habitat, then females may have lower survivorship and you may end up with a male bias sex ratio. So continuing to degrade the habitats and the wintering grounds overall is going to lower the population size.
Mara says these consequences of habitat loss for birds are more evidence of the need for conservation at both ends of their migratory routes. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
The following program is recommended for mature individuals and may contain material unsuitable for morons, cretins, and dishwipes.
Hey, I wanted to say dick dick.
Okay, give me your anaconda. I'll give you my dick dick.
Deal!
Anaconda! Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network. All right, boys, come on.
Handy Dave Rush here, inviting you to listen to Home Improvement USA. Ken Walchek from Chicago's number one hardware store, Clark Devon Hardware, John Seip from United Marketing Force, Jay Brentlinger from Orban, and of course Danny Lipford from today's Homeowner Television Show, take your home improvement questions. Our guests include industry experts from across the country. We've been America's most useful talk show for 10 years, so join us for Home Improvement USA every Saturday, 2 to 4 Eastern, and rebroadcast 8 to 10 Eastern right here on IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I don't want millions, mister. I don't want your diamond ring. All I want is the right to live, mister. Won't you give me back my job again? I don't want your Rolls Royce, mister. I don't want your pleasure yacht. All I want is food for my children. Won't you give me back the job I got?
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. That's Tom Rush. Tom Rush is just so good. He's an old friend. When back in 1978, when Louise and I started the community for abused kids in New Hampshire, the New England Salem Children's Village, which is still there and running and doing very well, and run by some just wonderful people who just work their tails off for very little. And anyhow, when we started that, Tom helped us raise money. He did concerts for us, and just a great guy and a brilliant musician. I'm always grateful to him. Anyhow, speaking of gratitude, oh, and our phone number, if you'd like to call, we'll just throw the lines open, any topic, anything you want to say throughout the day here. 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. Now, we were talking about think tanks, and the naughty ones, in my opinion, were the Heritage Foundation and the Ayn Rand group. And the nice ones, there's two of them here. The Center on Budget Priorities has done some extraordinary work. They are really a very nonpartisan think tank, you know, just going right down the middle. And they have issued press releases. For example, I'll just read you a couple of headlines here. Up to 1.6 million low-income people, including 500,000 children, are losing health coverage due to state budget cuts. That's one. Here's another one. Losing out. States are cutting 1.2 to 1.6 million low-income people from Medicaid, SHIP, and other state health insurance programs. And another one, out in the cold, enrollment freezes in six state children's health insurance programs withhold coverage from eligible children. We talked about that yesterday on the air here. And the other nice think tank, and the one that is very close to my heart, is the Center for American Progress. I attended their first annual conference in Washington, D.C. a few months ago. It was great. They did a great job. John Podesta's put this thing together with some help, I believe, from George Soros. And they published this daily alert, a daily news summary, which I found very useful. And, in fact, their daily news summary for today is all these naughty and nice things, many of which I'm sharing with you. We've put a few of our own in here, too. But great people. AmericanProgress.org is their website. And I, you know, recommend checking them out. Hey, just to digress a little bit for a moment, I'm sure you've heard about the thing about the mad cow disease. You may not have read the UPI story about it, however, United Press International, which was a once great news organization and then was bought out by Reverend Moon, along with the Washington Times, and or he owns the Washington Times, I believe he started the Washington Times. And now it's interesting. The UPI has been kicking out a few stories recently that are sort of against the grain. They're not going along the way the Washington Times does. And I'm just curious to know what's going on there at the UPI and are they trying to establish credibility? Are they trying to get out from underneath Reverend Moon or what? But anyhow, here's this story by Steve Mitchell, UPI. This published today. And last night, 11:06 p.m., was when it was first released into the stream. Although the headline is USDA refused to release mad cow records. And the story says, although the United States Department of Agriculture insisted the U.S. beef supply is safe Tuesday after announcing the first documented case of mad cow disease in the United States, the agency for 6 months repeatedly refused to release its tests for mad cow to UPI. The USDA claims to have tested approximately 20,000 cows for the disease in 2002 and 2003, but has been unable to provide any documentation in support of this to UPI, which first requested the information in July. In addition, former USDA veterinarians tell UPI they have long suspected the disease was in U.S. herds, and there are probably additional infected animals. They talk about how this cow that went down was sent for processing to Midway Meats in Washington, and the USDA is currently trying to trace if the meat went for human consumption. In other words, it's already out there in the stream, apparently. An outbreak of mad cow disease in the United States, the UPI says, has the potential to dwarf the situation in the United Kingdom because the American beef industry is far larger, and U.S. beef is exported to countries all over the globe. We're talking about billions of people around the world, said Lester Friedlander, a former USDA veterinarian who has been insisting mad cow is present in American herds for years. Veneman, the USDA secretary, Ann Veneman, who made the announcement, said, I plan to serve beef for my Christmas dinner, and we remain confident in the safety of our food supply. Former USDA veterinarian Friedlander says she might as well kiss her behind goodbye then. This one Washington cow was tested because it was a so-called downer cow, a cow unable to stand on its own, which is a sign of mad cow disease. However, the UPI says, the United States sees approximately 200,000 of these per year. and we only test 20,000. And when UPI said, let us see the tests, the USDA couldn't produce them or chose not to. So this may be, friends, the tip of the iceberg justifying the decision I made when I was 16 years old to stop eating meat and become a vegetarian. And not, I wasn't concerned about the safety. I mean, back then it was a statement of pacifism against the war in Vietnam, and it just stuck. I haven't eaten any meat since then, and I'm suspecting that more and more Americans are going to follow on that. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number, 1-800-825-5937. J.R. from Victorville, California is on the line. Hey, J.R., welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, I have an article that appeared in the Los Angeles Daily News on Thursday, December 18. I wanted to get your reaction to a couple of things in there.
Okay.
It says that salary cost of the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department soared by more than a third over the five-year period ending 2002, with pension costs nearly tripled, an independent audit showed Thursday. And basically what it's saying is that there was a 46% increase in salary and employee benefits. And here's the
isn't
part
that great?
Yeah. Auditor said most of the increased costs, including retirement and employee benefits, are outside BACA's control. And parenthetically, BACA is the sheriff, so that's why his name's in here. Noting that a 12.4% hike in salaries was negotiated between sheriff's unions and the county chief administrative office. So there's another good example of how good your unions are doing. They're busting the bank of the sheriff's department over there at the Los Angeles County Sheriff.
Well, J.R., the reality is that the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department negotiated that, as you read, with the unions. And so they know what their costs are up front. I mean, that's the great thing about negotiating a contract with unions is you know in advance what your costs are going to be. And so then you can make your business decisions based on those.
But he overspent his budget because of
and that's the fault
increases.
Of the union?
These increases, and again, it leads me back to the question I asked before, who's the master and who's the servant in these deals?
Well, the goal is to create a balanced playing field where neither is the master or the servant.
Yeah,
and in most situations, and that's what a union, I mean, as you said, this contract was negotiated. That means both sides agreed to it, which means there wasn't a master or servant here. There was an agreement.
Mm-hmm.
And if the county can't get their budget act together because George Bush goes off half-cocked and throws the nation into deficit spending and starts cutting off federal funds to communities and cuts back on the 100,000 cops that Bill Clinton put on the streets and off the water of federal money, then, you know, what does that have to do with the union?
That's real interesting that you had to figure out a way to get George Bush to be blamed for this. Astounding, really.
Replace George Bush with conservative policies.
The money for the county employees come from the people who live in Los Angeles. It doesn't have anything to do with George Bush and his cutting of the 100,000 officers or anything.
J.R., call your county. Call your county sheriff's department and find out who handles the money there. And call me back and tell me. I'll bet you. You know, I don't want to bet you something on the air because it's, you know, it's gambling and it's addictive.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm telling you, that county sheriff's department is getting federal money, and their federal funds have been cut.
If I'm wrong,
tell me.
I will follow up on that, but look, in 1996-97, the average retirement benefit cost was $3,500 per employee. That jumped to $9,000 by 2001.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
okay.
These guys
And it was
are,
agreed to by the county. And it was agreed to. See, that's the thing. That's the good thing about negotiating contracts. See, on the other hand, if you want to talk about slave and master, if you have employees at will where they have no contract, then you have a true slave-master relationship, and the slave is the employee.
No,
not a desirable thing.
The slave can make his decision. The employee can make his decision whether he wants to remain employed or not. He gets
JR. That's true in a world where there's actually full opportunity for employment. But you've got Alan Greenspan right now intentionally keeping a minimum of 6 million and a maximum of 8 million people continuously unemployed because that prevents people from asking for higher wages. JR, I don't want to turn the whole show into this thing. I appreciate your call. Thank you for sharing that. And we'll revisit this topic from time to time. We've got a lot of stuff here to go on. Another caller said wants to know if mad cow disease taints the milk as well. I have to say I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question. So I'm not a mad cow expert. We had I'm forgetting his name. He wrote a book called Mad Cow USA on this program 4 or 5 months ago. And I would refer you to that book, Mad Cow USA, which is a really, John Stauber was the author of that book, and a really well-written, authoritative, insightful, no-nonsense, no-hysteria, here's the facts, ma'am, kind of book. And I'm guessing that the answer to that question will be found in there. But I personally don't know the answer to it. My guess would be no, because I believe that mad cow disease is a prion disease that, and prions are proteins that can replicate themselves. Oh, it does? How did you find that out?
It was on,
oh, interesting. Louise just came in and said that on CNN last night, they said that it can get into the milk. My thought was that it wouldn't because it's these are prions that infect the nervous system. And so, you know, the things that are the most dangerous are things that have nerves in them, which would be like muscle meat and things like that. But who knows? I don't know. So we'll see. Back to our naughty and nice. Nice for in the area of taxes. Let's look at the realm of taxes. Close to your heart there, J.R. Governor Bob Riley of Alabama, for trying to avoid crippling a fiscal crisis while giving a hand to the working poor by narrowing the state's incredible income inequality and shifting the tax burden to big corporations. Now, here's what Bob Riley... In Alabama, first of all, just like most states and localities across the country, they got hit really bad when the conservatives started cutting back on federal funds in order to pay for their tax cut for the rich. And Alabama's governor... His new governor, Bob Riley, the guy who won the election, by the way. I mean, the Democrat won the election the night of the election, and overnight, the electronic voting machines noticed somehow that, as I recall, it was 8,000 votes, maybe it was 12,000, but it was a small number of votes, really should have been Bob Riley's votes, not his Democratic opponent, the former governor, and they just moved them. And the Democrat who was running, you know, tried to get a recount, and they said, no, you can't recount these things. They're digital. And so, anyhow, maybe this is his karma coming back here, Bob Riley. As the Associated Press reports reported this before the taxpayers rejected this, the Alabama governor calls tax hike Christian duty. Alabama's new governor is trying to persuade voters to approve the biggest tax increase in state history by telling them it is their Christian duty, reports the AP. Republican Governor Bob Riley's $1.2 billion tax package, is alienating even the Christian coalition. Riley says the tax increase is needed to erase Alabama's biggest deficit since the Depression and improve education. The plan also seeks to help the poor by raising the income level at which people have to begin paying state taxes. And here's the kicker. If you live in Alabama and you work for a living and you are a family of four and you earn $4,600 a year, you have to pay income taxes. Thomas Jefferson wrote about this at some length. I don't have the quote right in front of me. In fact, let me share with you our quote for today, our Wednesday quote. This is from a letter to DuPont Nemours, April 24, 1816. He said, "Enlighten the people generally, and tyranny and oppressions of body and mind will vanish like spirits at the dawn of day." Our mission statement here for this program. Anyhow, Thomas Jefferson, back in the late 1700s, I believe it's in his Notes on Virginia. I was just reading this just the weekend before last. And he wrote about how... Oh, no, it was in a correspondence with the French general. Anyway, he wrote about how taxes should not be levied on. He said, first of all, there's three ways you can generate tax revenue. You can generate tax revenue with duties and tariffs. You can generate tax revenue with a sales tax. It wasn't duties and tariffs. That's how the country was being run. He said, you can generate tax revenues by taxing the wealth of people. In other words, at the end of the year, they add up what they have and they pay a tax based on it. Several European countries do that. You can tax people based on their income, or you can tax people based on, or you can tax the sale of things, sales tax. And Jefferson said, first of all, we should never have more than one of these because that would be double taxation. And of course, we have two of those three. And secondly, he said, no tax should be assessed to anybody, no sales tax, no income tax, who is using 100% of their income to cover the necessities of what he called the necessaries of life. And so once the necessaries of life are taken care of, then people should start paying taxes, in Jefferson's opinion. And, you know, what that threshold was back then is a little different than today, but it's certainly somebody earning $4,600 has not covered all the necessaries of life. And so what Bob Riley, the Republican governor of Alabama, was suggesting was, hey, let's. He says it is immoral to charge somebody making $5,000 a year with a family of four and income tax. And so he was saying, let's raise the point at which income taxes start, and let's increase the taxes on the very wealthy and on the corporations. The naughty were Newt Gingrich, Grover Norquist, and Dick Armey, who led the campaign to shoot this thing down. It was just absolutely immoral. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Quick question. Ever had a cold that only lasted 4 hours? Anybody? Then why take a 4-hour cold medicine? Instead, take Aleve Cold and Sinus. One pill has the strength to give you 12 hours of relief. No stuffy nose, no throbbing head, all day. So what's it going to be? 12 hours of relief or symptoms that interrupt your day? Do I really need to ask?
Try non-drowsy Aleve Cold and Sinus. One pill, 12 hours of relief. Use as directed.
Wish I could watch some TV. If only my couch wasn't 43,000 feet away.
When you're in bed with the flu, the smallest distance can seem impossible.
If only the medicine cabinet wasn't way across the state line.
If only. If only you had the strength. You need Advil Flu and Body Ache. The power of Advil so nothing works harder on body aches, headaches, and fever. Plus a hard-working decongestant. Makes having the flu a lot more comfortable.
Now, if only I had a plasma TV.
Fight the flu with Advil Flu and Body Ache. Use as directed.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Greetings, everybody. This is Ramsey Pollard, Jr., the host of IE America's Sunday afternoon travel show, Ramblin' with Ramsey, on air 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Almost every Sunday, I travel to some location to offer you the opportunity of not only receiving wonderful printed material about the location, but to win a prize, maybe a couple of nights in a hotel or a resort or T-shirts or fudge. Oh, yes, there's always a lot of fudge. Come on, tune us in on your radio or go to IEAmericaRadio.com. I'll be there.
First appearance of Superman in Action Comics number 1, $400,000. First appearance of Batman in Detective Comics number 27, $350,000. First appearance of Spider-Man in Amazing Fantasy 15, $50,000. Listening to that comic book show and envisioning two fat guys in tights, priceless.
Listen to that comic book show Sundays from 9 p.m. to 10 Eastern on the IE America Radio Network.
Mike Molloy Show.
Apparently, Simple Scotty missed the memo from Bush stating that everybody had to stop trying to link Saddam to 911.
The most dangerous threat we face in a post-September 11th world is the nexus between outlaw regimes with weapons of mass destruction and terrorists. Saddam Hussein had a history of weapons of mass destruction.
Maybe before you were born, you little jackass. Did Scotty not get the memo? There is no connection between 9/11 and Saddam. It came out of the Bush bastard's own mouth. It's come out of all their mouths. Condi Rice, Dick Cheney, Colin Powell, all of them. Scotty, hello.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Christmas jams at the tunnel, shop through hustle and bustle. Snowing lights make Wonderland out this concrete jungle. There's miracles on 34th Street. On a train, get that lady with all them bags you see. Radio City for the Christmas show. We making angels in the snow, giving honey lots of kisses under mistletoe. Snowball fights in courtyards. See Spanish Harlem sing Feliz Navidad. New York State of Mind at Christmas time. And the
all the children showing their new clothes and toys and things that they got for Christmas this year. They're full of happiness.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Kwanzaa, and winter solstice for the pagans among us. It is that season, and a marvelous one it is. Although it's raining here in the People's Republic of Vermont, but they tell us that tomorrow it's going to turn to snow. So we get 3-2.5 feet of snow on the ground with a inch thick layer of ice over the top of it. It's getting strange. Alabama's conservative governor, we were talking about just about the before the break, Bob Riley. He proposed this tax increase, and the naughty and nice. I mean, he was trying to do the right thing for his state, saying, hey, you know, we have a certain level of state services that we've agreed to. We have made this contract with the people that we will provide these services. And they have, you know, elected us and put us into positions of power to do this. And now we have to pay for them. I mean, it's a simple reality. And people actually do want to have schools that work. And they, you know, anyhow, so Grover Norquist, the Americans for Tax Reform, says, and he and Tom DeLay and Dick Armey, Newt Gingrich, they're inserting themselves into Alabama state politics. And they were successful in getting this tax increase shot down by a 67-33% vote. And people didn't get what's going to happen because it's happening now. But Grover Norquist says this is a shot across the bow for next year's decision making. Every Republican governor who thinks of raising taxes next year will walk past Traitor's Gate and see Bob Riley's head on a pike. Yeah, that's good conservative thinking. Heads on a pike. So our naughty guys are Dick Armey, Newt Gingrich, and Grover Norquist. Our nice guy, Bob Riley, in the area of taxes. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, transforming the world by revitalizing democracy. Stay tuned. We'll be back after the news.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003. Animal Talk, helping you with your pets and talking to celebrities, like from The Cosby Show and the Dr. Doolittle movies, Raven Simone. Do you have any pets of your own?
I do. I have two chinchillas and I have a big Briard.
Do you train your dog?
I don't. I just give him love and take him out, so he better love me because I have to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
So here you are, Charisse Doolittle, who talks to the animals, and you don't even train your own dog. Nothing but love.
Nothing but love. All they need is love.
Animal Talk, Saturdays and Sundays on the IE America Radio Network.
Yes, I'm calling about the Mike Malloy program. You know, the reason I turned this man off...
Why?
...is because he sounds like an 8-year-old.
Me?
Name calling.
I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not.
You should get somebody who at least has some intelligence.
No, don't fire me. No. I got kids in college.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time, on IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Michael Stinson in Los Angeles.
Labor unions in the Czech Republic demanded Monday that stores stop playing Christmas carols incessantly or pay compensation for causing emotional trauma to the sales clerks. Some stores here play the same songs all day long and play them loudly. Employees say shifts have become unbearable. To listen to it for 8 hours a day is not healthy, that's for sure, said Alexander Lanier, a union leader. And for the customers, it's almost unbearable as well. Lanier said unions have written to major chains such as Tesco and demanded that employees be compensated. He said the unions want 500 karuna, U.S. $19, or 2 days off as a possible compensation. They've received no response. Unions in neighboring Austria have lodged similar complaints against stores there. Forget turkey and mince pies. This Christmas, Australians are being urged to serve native foods such as smoked kangaroo with wild lime and brandy sauce and wattle seed pavlova. Despite an abundance of unique fruits, nuts, and meat that have sustained the country's original Aboriginal inhabitants for centuries, Australians are only now embracing native food, with some supermarkets starting to stock indigenous produce this year. The step to the mainstream has inspired campaigners who have struggled to get indigenous foods onto the nation's dining tables and destroy the image of native food as simply juicy fat wachetti grubs, protein-rich bogong moths, and honey ants. It doesn't matter if you're naughty or nice. If you're a prisoner in Arkansas, you will receive a gift this Christmas. Prison officials will give each of the 13,500 inmates in the state 2 apples, 2 oranges, as well as $5 on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day in a bid to make life a bit brighter for those behind bars over the holidays. The $70,000 cost for the program is paid for by prison vending machine profits and from rebates the system receives on long-distance calls placed by the inmates. The fresh fruit is donated from various U.S. orchards. For security reasons, the prison system forbids inmates' friends and relatives from sending gifts to prisoners at any time of the year, except for gift packages purchased through prison commissaries. More news after this.
Military veterans deserve better. They must wait endlessly for basic health care from the Department of Veterans Affairs. If you or a military veteran you know is one of the many heroes waiting for VA health care, the American Legion wants to tell your story to your elected officials in Washington, D.C.
Sadly, hair-pulling shopper scuffles and smothering store stampedes have become holiday season fixtures in recent years, but that's not a new phenomenon. Shopping historian Laura Byrne Paquette said shoppers have been stampeding since at least the 1930s. In one example from the time of the Great Depression, a man was shoved against some kind of iron store fixture and was knocked out. A store manager dragged him into an elevator and whisked him away. Paquette thinks the problem is bigger today because she said everyone seems to be under a lot of pressure and we're all used to getting things now, right away, when we want them. This is Michael Stinson in Los Angeles.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
I had a bad headache. I tried Advil Liquid Gels. They work faster than Tylenol.
I needed stronger medicine, and Advil Liquid Gels get that medicine to my headache faster.
I get better relief with Advil Liquid Gels.
Every day, more people are choosing Advil Liquid Gels to relieve tough headache pain. Advil has these advanced capsules with liquid medicine inside to rush relief where you need it. Proven faster, stronger, better than Tylenol.
Now, every time I get a tough headache, I choose Advil Liquid Gels.
For better headache relief, advance to Advil.
Here's a novel concept. If you work full-time and do a good job, you shouldn't be paid so poorly that you live in poverty. Try to tell that to the federal government, though. An independent study released by Acorn, the grassroots advocate for the working poor, finds that corporations enjoying fat, tax-paid contracts from the feds are paying poverty wages to the people actually doing the contract work. The same federal government that sets precise standards for, say, the tensile strength of screws that it buys, sets no standards for the fair pay of people working under its contracts. The study, conducted by the Economic Policy Institute, revealed that 11% of federal contract employees receive less than a living wage, which is to say, their paychecks are too low to lift them and their families above the poverty level. In this period of economic prosperity and federal surpluses, in this period when Congress annually raises its own pay, in this period when federal contracts routinely cover the million-dollar paychecks of the corporate CEOs getting the contracts, it's absurd that our tax dollars would be used to subsidize sub-poverty pay. Ironically, while the companies profit on the backs of these workers, many of the workers themselves have to turn to food stamps, housing assistance, and other federal poverty programs just to make ends meet. This means that we taxpayers are hit with a double whammy. First, we're subsidizing low-wage companies. Then, we have to provide services to assuage the poverty of their workers. This is Jim Hightower saying, better that the contractors themselves be required to pay fair wages from the start. Which is why the Living Wage Responsibility Act has been introduced in Congress, sponsored by Representative Luis Gutierrez of Illinois. It requires big businesses that get federal contracts to pay their employees a wage no less than the federal poverty level. For more information, contact Acorn, 202-547-2500.
I would like to see a law that says your organs automatically get donated unless you say no.
All right, Richie, have you got an organ donor specification?
No.
Why?
Because I don't want them taking me before I'm dead.
In Richie's case, what good would most of those organs be?
Certainly won't be going for his brain. Or they might, because it's never been used.
You might as well be dead. Your brain is, so why not the rest of you?
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Naughty and nice. We are looking at, on this holiday season here, checking the list, making a list and checking it twice here. Who's been naughty and nice? And our naughty for the day, or not for the day, for the as we go through the list here, our naughty House Majority Leader Tom DeLay for using poor children as a pretext to get around the law and funnel charitable contributions to wine and dine corporate fat cats for partisan political purposes. You remember this thing? Tom DeLay set up this charity, a 501c3 charity, a nonprofit. You give money to it, and it's tax deductible. And that charity is then sponsoring some of the big hoop-de-doops that are going to happen during the Republican National Committee, or convention, rather, where the lobbyists and the corporate fat cats get to hang out with the politicians that they have bought. And the nice, of course, are kids for being so darn cute, isn't it? Just, you know, kids are wonderful. Naughty and nice, Senators John McCain and Chuck Hagel are on the nice category, and Republicans for telling the truth about the war in Iraq. I mean, both of them, on several different occasions, came out and said, you know, things are not, this is the wrong policy. These guys, George Bush is making a mistake, you know, and things like that. They were willing to criticize George Bush. The naughty Senators Max Baucus and John Breaux, Bill Frist. Here's if you see this photo of George Bush signing the health care bill. Here's George Bush sitting at the desk. And let's just go around the circle here. Here's Billy Towson. The health industry gave him $601,077. The drug industry gave him $211,249. He's got a big smile on his face. Senator John Breaux, the health industry gave him $118,000. The drug industry gave him $59,000. Senator Bill Frist, a guy whose family made millions privatizing hospitals and squeezing dollars out of the poor people who show up desperate for medical services, health industry gave him $500,000, $550,264. The drug industry, $123,957. Now, these are all actual, you know, here's the cash guy numbers. I mean, you throw on top of these the thousands of trips these guys get all over the world and the lavish goodies and the bennies, and it just goes on and on. Senator Orrin Hatch was there. He had a big smile on his face, $743,940 from the health industry, $433,324 from the drug industry. Senator Max Baucus, $646,000 from the health industry, $145,000 from the drug industry. Senator Charles Grassley, $573,000 from the health industry, $217,000 from the drug industry. Denny Hastert, the Speaker of the House, the health industry gave him over $500,000, almost $200,000 from the drug industry. Representative Tom DeLay, over $250,000 from the health industry, and $78,000 from the drug industry. And, of course, George Bush signing the bill. The health industry gave him $7,549,695, and the drug industry gave him nearly $1 million. Now, if you look on our website at TomHartmann.com, you'll find a thing called Tom Hartmann's 10 Steps to Restore Democracy to America. This illustrates the absolute crime that is being committed in the United States of the sale of the most valuable and vital of our commons, our government, to for-profit interests, to corporations. And the way that I address this here is the human rights are for humans. Corporations are not persons. We must update the 14th Amendment to insert the word natural before the word person, so corporations can no longer claim the right to lie, the right to hide their crimes, the right to buy politicians and influence elections, and the right to force themselves on communities that don't want them. Corporate charter laws should be amended on a state-by-state basis to reinstate the spirit of the Sherman Antitrust Act by again outlawing the ownership of one corporation by another. I mean, it's really strange. Corporations want to have it both ways. Corporate lawyers say a corporation is a person. It's an artificial person, but it's a person, and therefore should have privacy rights. So, for example, one of the big examples, one of the big chemical companies. There was a whistleblower who notified the EPA that they were polluting. The EPA shows up and says, "Hi, we're here to do a surprise inspection of your chemical factory." And the chemical company says, "No, sorry, you can't do that." And the EPA says, "Well, we were created to do that." And Dow says, the chemical company says, "No, sorry, under the Fourth Amendment," well, it was Dow Chemical, "under the Fourth Amendment, we are a person. We have Fourth Amendment rights of privacy." You know, the Fourth Amendment that says that you shall be secure in your persons and papers. Persons shall be secure. Anyway, Dow says, "No, we're a person. You can't do that." And so the EPA hired a small plane and a pilot and a photographer, and they flew over this facility to document what was going on, and they were preparing to prosecute, and Dow said, "Hey, you can't use that evidence because you got it illegally because you violated our privacy rights." And they took this all the way to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court said, "Well, if back in 1886 this court said that corporations are persons," which, by the way, it turns out the court never said, but the court's reporter wrote down that the court said in the headnote. But when you actually read the decision, the ruling, the court said the opposite. But nonetheless, the court, the modern-day court, looked back at that 1886 case, Santa Clara County versus Southern Pacific Railroad, and said, "Well, if corporations are persons, I guess they have Fourth Amendment privacy rights." And so they threw the case out. Dow won the case. And that's why OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, and the Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA, can no longer do surprise inspections. But if you work for one of these companies, now, you and I, we're the people, right? We're the human beings. We're the ones for whom the Fourth Amendment was written. Remember? If you work for one of these corporations and you go to work, although the corporation is asserting 24/7 that they have the Fourth Amendment right of privacy, the right to keep their secrets. One of the tobacco companies asserted this also back in the 1930s before the Supreme Court. If they are asserting that, and they are, I mean, they're saying, hey, we have the right to privacy. But you go to work, as soon as you step on their property, they say, hey, we own this property, and therefore, if you come onto our property, you are voluntarily surrendering your constitutional right to privacy. And we can monitor your keyboard strokes, we can listen into your telephone conversations, we can even inspect fluids from your body. We can secretly videotape you. We can look into your credit record. There's all kinds of, you know, no, you have no right of privacy when you step onto the property of a corporation. But that corporation is claiming it 24/7. This is just wrong. It's just plain old flat out wrong. And so it's time to change this and to insert corporate code-like language requiring a corporation to place the needs of the community above its desire for profits, which also used to be law up until the 1890s, the charter-mongering era, from 1776 to 1890, more or less. Every state had laws that said if a corporation is going to incorporate in our state, its first purpose for incorporation has to be to benefit the citizens of this state. And the way that it is going to benefit the citizens of this state is by doing the business that it's going into. So if you're going to make, you know, stagecoaches, you have to demonstrate that you're making those stagecoaches is of some benefit to the citizens, even if it's just providing them with employment. It wasn't a particularly high bar to leap over. It wasn't a particularly high standard. It wasn't difficult to meet. But at least it was there. Because now there are corporations that clearly not only are not serving the needs of the states in which they're incorporated, but are harming people in the states in which they are incorporated. And because this is no longer part of our laws, the states can no longer do what Ohio did to John Rockefeller back in 1880-something, 1886, 1881, I forget which year it was, and said, hey, you can't do business like this. It's harmful to the people of our state. You're poisoning people. You're engaging in monopolistic practice. You're driving entrepreneurs out of business. It's illegal. We're not going to have it. And that's, of course, when it all started to fall apart, because he then went to New Jersey and said, will you change your laws so that what I'm doing will now become legal in your state? And if you'll do that, I'll bring a lot of money to your state, and some of that money's going to find its way to your politicians. And New Jersey sat up and said, hey, cool. And then New York said, well, we'll change our laws. And then Delaware said, well, we'll change our laws even more. And Delaware ended up winning the battle. Delaware has the laxest or easiest corporate laws of any state in the union, which is why the majority of the Fortune 500 companies are Delaware corporations, even though, you know, they actually don't do much business in Delaware. But I digress. Anyhow, and as Teddy Roosevelt so strongly urged us, to ban corporations from political activity of any sort. This, I shared this a couple days ago, but it's worth revisiting. This from a 1905 law in the state of Wisconsin, which was an update to a law that went back to the 1700s. Every state in the Union had laws like this on the books. This one didn't get struck down until the 1940s or the 1950s, either 1945 or 1954. My memory fails me on that, but one or the other. Sometimes I get numbers, you know, backwards like that. And it really, you know, they pretty much stopped enforcing it in the early 40s. But now all the states have removed these laws. This is a law that used to be the law in every state. Political contributions by corporations. And in fact, Teddy Roosevelt, I mean, in 1907, he passed a law to this effect at the federal level. No corporation doing business in this state shall pay or contribute or offer, consent, or agree to pay or contribute directly or indirectly any money, property, free service of its officers or employees or thing of value to any political party, organization, committee, or individual for any political purpose whatsoever. Or for the purpose of influencing legislation of any kind, or to promote or defeat the candidacy of any person for nomination, appointment, or election to any political office. Is that fairly clear? Penalty.
Any officer, employee, agent, attorney, or other representative of any corporation acting for and in behalf of such corporation who shall violate this act shall be punished by imprisonment in the state prison for a period of not less than 1 nor more than 5 years, or by both such fine and imprisonment, the discretion of the court or judge before whom such conviction is had. And if the corporation is found guilty, it shall be subject to a penalty, then by forfeiture in double the amount of the fine, and if a domestic corporation, it may be dissolved. It was the death penalty for corporations. Dissolved. And if a foreign or non-resident corporation, its right to do business in this state will be declared forfeit. People were still making money. People were still running businesses. I mean, this was the law of the land for a long time in the United States. And we were the envy of the world. We led the Industrial Revolution. We were doing just fine. But as J.R. pointed out, the corporations didn't quite like the balance of power. They wanted to rise up and take not just us and our lives, but our government as well. The largest of the corporations. Yeah, there's a lot of small and medium-sized corporations out there doing a lot of good stuff. But we have now this corporate tyranny, and it's got to stop. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
And tonight's winning jackpot numbers are... Jane, would you do the honors?
17. 6. 39 and...
Oh, cut. You sound awful.
Oh, my nose is runny. Head's all blocked up. I need my Alka-Seltzer Plus.
Only Alka-Seltzer Plus has an effervescent formula that breaks up nasal congestion and relieves your worst cold symptoms fast.
And the numbers are... Jane?
17. 6. 39 and 75.
Alka-Seltzer Plus breaks up your worst cold symptoms fast.
Hi, my name is Allison, and I met my fiancé Daniel at eHarmony.com.
My name is Ron, and I met my wife on eHarmony.com.
My name is Brenda, and I met my fiancé Tom on eHarmony.com.
There's a reason why couples who meet on eHarmony.com are falling in love and getting married. Hi, I'm Dr. Neil Clark Warren, founder of eHarmony.com. Successful relationships always begin with broad-based compatibility. That's why at eHarmony.com we match you based on 29 dimensions of compatibility.
It helps you to figure out you, then it helps you to find that person that you are most compatible with.
You're learning intimate things about the person right from the very beginning.
There's a depth to eHarmony that the other sites don't have.
Log on to eHarmony.com and see for yourself why more eHarmony.com matches result in marriage than any online dating service. Do it right now and get your $40 personality profile free.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back, and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Are you stressed because you haven't gotten all of your Christmas shopping done? Well, get the toy that all the kids with mentally disturbed parents find under their tree. The Captured Saddam Doll.
Wow!
The Captured Saddam Doll comes with the long-haired drugged Saddam, his spider hole, and all the crap in it.
I can't believe it.
Each doll comes with its own body odor.
Whoa, stinky!
Not one doll smells the same. Order within the next 10 minutes, and you'll also get the mini letters sent to Saddam telling him to stay in that damn hole until we need you.
Neat.
These dolls will only be available for a short time, so act now.
I want to capture Saddam down for Christmas, Dad.
So do I, son. So call 1-800-MARK-IT-OUR-WAY to a second term now and order your captured Saddam doll for only $199.95. Order two captured Saddam dolls and get a Go AWOL and still get in the White House for Dummies book free. Brainwash your kids this year and get the captured Saddam doll today.
Customers must like playing war games on PlayStation 2 and playing with action figures like our Commander-in-Chief or pay an extra tax of $2,000 per doll. Supplies are limited. Order today.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Twas in another lifetime, one of toil and blood, when blackness was a virtue, when the road was full of mud. I come in from the wilderness, a creature void of form. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm. If I pass this way again, you can rest assured I'll always do my best for her, on that I give my word. In a world of steel-eyed death and men who are fighting to be warm, come in, she said, I'll give you a shelter from the storm.
Surety. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Welcome back.
We're doing naughty and nice here on Christmas Eve. And a couple of days before Kwanzaa, in the middle of Hanukkah, we are just right up to our eyeballs in holidays. Just a few days after the winter solstice, the day when we lived in Germany, I heard this story from the locals that thousands of years ago, on the shortest day of the year, when everybody was really getting worried that the sun was never going to come back, that it was just about to blink out, the high priest would go up to the tallest mountain, find the biggest tree, light that big pine tree, light that thing on fire, and say an incantation to reignite the sun, and then the next day, the day would be a little longer. And the next day after that, the day would be a little longer, and the sun would be a little higher in the sky, and the people would all look at the priest and go, he did it again. And thus we have Christmas trees. So, whether you're celebrating that pagan holiday, or whether you're celebrating Christmas, or Kwanzaa, or Hanukkah, or nothing at all, just celebrating life, just the existence, the wonder of existence, it's an extraordinary thing. And but anyhow, in the spirit of Christmas, we're doing naughty and nice today. And if you'd like to call, if you have a naughty or nice that you'd like to share, or you want to get into any other topic at all, we'll just make it available. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And our nice, first of all, Rush Limbaugh, for admitting that he has a drug problem and seeking help. I mean, that was a pretty reasonable thing to do. Some would put a cynical spin on it. I'm among them. But nonetheless, one would hope that he could be a positive example, right? Okay, our naughty is also Rush Limbaugh. Why? For saying things like, back in 1995 when Jerry Garcia died, saying, he's just another dead drug addict. And on October 5th, 1995, saying, so if people are violating the law by doing drugs, they ought to be accused and they ought to be convicted and they ought to be set up. Too many whites are getting away with drug use. Too many whites are getting away with drug sales. Too many whites are getting away with trafficking and this stuff. The answer to this disparity is not to start letting people out of jail, because we're not going to put others in jail who are breaking the law. The answer is to go out and find the ones who are getting away with it, convict them, and send them up the river too. And further, I don't buy into the disease part of it. We're rationalizing all this irresponsibility and all the choices people are making, and we're blaming not them but society for it. And now it seems that Rush may have a new song to sing.
Excellent Incarcerated Broadcasting brings you live from Cell Block 9, the biggest mouth in the big house,
Rush Limbaugh!
Yes, I'm in the slammer. Thanks very much. But I can still yammer. I haven't lost my touch. It's Friday. Time for open line. Be a couple hundred more till I've done my time. Get down. I'll just keep talking truth and motherhood to Main Street and now the Aryan Brotherhood. And every time I mention that drugs ain't worth it, they credit me 6 months community service. Ha! Liberals! Don't you just love them? Yeah, I got my crew, in case you imagine you can mess with me in any fashion. You really think you're going to get a piece? I suggest you have a word with my man Maurice. Come over here, big fella.
Yeah, the big man's putting us on the map, so for all we care, he can yap, yap, yap. 14 hours a day, shout, just shut your pie hole when the lights go out.
That is my firm and unyielding belief. Now, just to make sure you don't miss my point, I'm not closing down just because I'm in the joint. But I ain't no little Jesus. I'm rushed, so there's no way I'm eating this mealy mush. No, those who do the work of educating and informing need a little extra fuel to start the morning. So if you don't like my grabbing an extra meal, have a talk over here with my man Shaquille.
Rush Limbaugh, our nice and naughty guy of the year. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
Didn't think you could still get union-made clothing in America? Well, think again. It's here, now, and just a mouse click away at www.nosweatshop.com, the world's first shopping mall that doesn't sell clothing made in sweatshops. At nosweatshop.com, there's jeans and oxfords, sweats and hoodies, fleece jackets and sports bras, caps, scarves, and more. You can get great quality, support good jobs, and pay a fair price. You can't stretch a buck any further than that. Nosweatshop.com. A better world is just a mouse click away.
Hi, this is Ron Mitzinger, Director of Affiliate Relations at IE America Radio Network, hoping you and your family have a happy holiday.
The winter homes of migratory birds have a big impact on their well-being the next summer. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. A lot of migratory birds that spend the summer in North America are now in tropical regions keeping warm. Their long-term survival depends on having places to call home at both ends of their range. But the winter habitat of some birds has been logged or converted to pastures for cattle. Researchers say these birds might be able to find new places to live, but they'll have a harder time finding the food they need to keep healthy. Peter Mara is an ecologist with the Smithsonian Environmental Research Center in Maryland. He studied one migratory bird, the redstart, that spends the winter in Central America and on Caribbean islands. Some of the birds lived in prime habitat in mangrove swamps. Others were forced to live in less desirable habitat that was dry and scrubby. Mara says birds that spent the winter in the mangroves weighed more and produced more chicks the following summer. Mara says older male birds dominate the better habitats, and they push out females and younger males. Under normal conditions, that gives them better food in the winter and an advantage in the spring. They can start their migrations earlier and stake out prime habitat for breeding when they get home. But the natural competitiveness of the older male birds might be hard on females if they can't find enough food in the winter. And if fewer females survive the winter, the result will be more males than females in the spring, and ultimately fewer offspring.
So if males are continuing to dominate and exclude females into the poorer habitat, then females may have lower survivorship and you may end up with a male bias sex ratio. So continuing to degrade the habitats and the wintering grounds overall is going to lower the population size.
Mara says these consequences of habitat loss for birds are more evidence of the need for conservation at both ends of their migratory routes. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Hi, this is Suzanne Gowardy.
I'm El Bracciotti, the famous mariachi.
Whatever.
This is Renee Scarponi.
Hey, baby.
This is Kim Kasnick.
Yeah, baby.
This is John Lucas.
Hey.
This is Stephanie Stryker.
Yeah, bud.
This is Steve Damshire.
This is Shaw Jones.
This is Bill Vellner.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Ron Mitzinger.
From our family to yours, have a
happy holiday and a great new year.
Isn't that just too...
I like Santa Claus!
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics.
Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com. And join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, I've heard newborn babies crying like a moaning dove, and old men with broken teeth stranded without love. Do I understand your question, man? Is it hopeless and forlorn? Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm.
Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network and Rush Limbaugh, our naughty and nice guy. Well, that raises the issue of health care, in my opinion, because drug addiction really appropriately is a medical condition. It should be handled by physicians, not by police officers. And an opinion that I suspect certain right-wing talk show hosts are beginning to share. Nonetheless, such health care should not just be available to people who make over $100 million, like Limbaugh. It should be available to everybody. This is, in order to have a vibrant and healthy democracy, we must have a stable middle class. You must have the working people of a nation must know that if they get sick, they're going to be okay. That when they get old and retire, they're going to be taken care of. That is, that they're taking care of themselves by virtue of Social Security. They're paying into it throughout. But that it's done in such a way that there's actually enough there to retire on. And that their basic needs, their basic, you know, the education for their children, the ability to get food that is safe, speaking of mad cow disease, the ability to have water that is safe, the ability to breathe air that is not filled with 15 tons of mercury, 15,000 tons of mercury. It's the ability to live in this world. That baseline is there. That's, you know, that's what Teddy Roosevelt was talking about when he said we need to have in America in 1913. He said we need to have in America a living wage. A living wage that's enough that a person with a 40-hour work week, I think back then it was a 50-hour work week, but whatever, with a solid week of work, if you're going to put in the days of your life in the service of whatever it may be, whatever, you know, a company, a government, working in a school, whatever it may be, if you're going to put in the days of your life, you should know that what you're going to get in exchange for that is enough to survive on. It's just a very simple issue. And one dimension of that survival is health care. And this has become a real issue in the United States in the last 40 years or so, and particularly in the last 20 years since we, during the Reagan Revolution and in the time following when the con agenda got stronger and stronger, the con started saying, hey, health care is not part of the commons. Hospitals should not be part of the commons. A county should not be running a hospital for the citizens of the county. A hospital should be run by private wealthy investors for profit. So if you get sick, somebody can make some money off you. And I mean, this is a terribly, terribly flawed concept. The upshot of this concept is that, or the religion behind this concept, is that anything that advances gross domestic product, anything that increases economic activity, is good. The GDP is a good thing. That seeing an increase in GDP is good, and that's all we're going to measure. And as Bobby Kennedy said, our gross domestic product, or back then it was called gross national product, he said, you know, Richard Speck's guns are included in it. The guy who was killing people from the tower in Texas, as I recall. And you know, he went through this whole list of terrible things that have happened and talked about how they've all raised GDP. In fact, here's a little clip from Adbusters that really does a good job of capturing this and the insanity of a system that says, you know, if somebody gets sick, the average cancer case costs $250,000, whether the person lives or dies. Somebody gets cancer, and the economic activity of the country just increased by $250,000. And then the cons on top of that say, and of that $250,000, somebody should get a slice of that action for investing in it. And, of course, historically what we said is for that $250,000 is part of the commons, or a good chunk of it, you know, the hospital part of it and things like that. And we pay for it, we use it. But the cons came along and said, hey, here's an opportunity for us to make some more money, to squeeze some more money out of the body politic, to squeeze more money out of the citizens. So anyhow, here's that Adbusters ad. This is a brilliant.
For years, economists have defined the economic health of a country by its gross domestic product. Trouble is, every time a forest falls, the GDP goes up. With every oil spill, the GDP goes up. Every time a cancer patient is diagnosed, the GDP goes up. Is this how we measure economic progress? Economists must learn to subtract.
Yeah, and we need new metrics, is the bottom line. Saner metrics. And we need to re-examine. I mean, how many Americans really understand the concept of the commons? It's something that you know, 30, 40 years ago when I was in school was just, I mean, it was there. I mean, people understood it broadly. And certainly in my father's generation, and my father and mother's generation, they understood it well. And in their parents' generation, it was a given. And to the point that, and going all the way back to the point that when many of our states were created, they weren't called states. They were called commonwealths because it was a government created to protect and administer the wealth of the commons. Well, speaking of the commonwealth, here's the naughty for the reconstruction efforts. The nice that the Center for American Progress suggested was Morocco for offering 2,000 landmine detonating monkeys to join the coalition of the willing in Iraq at no charge. I have a hard time with that, frankly. I'm not in favor of blowing up monkeys any more than I am blowing up people. They're naughty, which is brilliant, is Halliburton for receiving more than $2 billion in no-bid government contracts and then overcharging the government by at least another $61 million and in return feeding soldiers in Iraq unsanitary food. Here's the story from The Guardian. Halliburton, the Texas company, which has been awarded the Pentagon's contract to put out potential oil field fires in Iraq and which is bidding for post-war construction contracts, is making annual payments to its former chief executive, the vice president, Dick Cheney. The payments, which appear on Mr. Cheney's 2001 financial disclosure statement, are in the form of deferred compensation of up to $1 million a year. So Dick Cheney is still being paid every year up to $1 million by Halliburton. The vice president, however, an aide said, has nothing whatsoever to do with the Pentagon bidding process. He still also owns hundreds of thousands of unexercised stock options, and those stock options are skyrocketing in value as Halliburton gets these huge government contracts. And then we see from the Armed Forces Press, the AFP. I'm sorry, I'm not sure what the news service is here. This is from the Taipei Times, AFP Washington. The Pentagon, December 14. The Pentagon repeatedly warned contractor Halliburton KBR that the food it served to U.S. troops in Iraq was dirty, as were the kitchens it was served in. NBC News reported on Friday. Halliburton, Kellogg, Brown, and Root's promises to improve have not been followed through. The Pentagon reports finding, quote, blood all over the floor, dirty pans, dirty grills, dirty salad bars, rotting meats and vegetables, end quote, in four of the military messes the company operates in Iraq, NBC said. The report came as President George W. Bush fended off Pentagon reports that Halliburton KBR overcharged the United States $61 million for gasoline it sold the military in Iraq. Dick Cheney ran Halliburton for 5 years until becoming vice president. And on it goes. Naughty and nice. Nice for prescription drugs. Canada for negotiating with big pharmaceutical companies to obtain affordable, safe drugs. Canada, you know, it's interesting. Canada is just doing the same thing the Department of Defense does. I'm surprised that this doesn't get more, you know, widespread notice. But the Department of Defense, when it purchases drugs for the military, for the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, the Marine Corps, and the Veterans Hospitals, the Department of Defense negotiates with the pharmaceutical companies. And they go in and they say, hey, you know, based on last year's consumption, we know that this year we're going to need 3.7 million penicillin pills. What's your best price? And the pharmaceutical companies say, well, you know, it's normally it retails for 10 bucks a pill, but, you know, our wholesale is $5 a pill, but you're buying a big quantity and our manufacturing cost is 30 cents a pill, so we'll sell them to you for 75 cents. You know, or whatever it is. I mean, I'm just making up numbers here, but it's that sort of thing. And the Pentagon gets these really good deals. They're getting Canada-like prices. Why don't we just buy our drugs from the Pentagon? See, the government is already negotiating with the drug companies. But in the Medicare bill that was just passed, the government is expressly forbidden from negotiating with the pharmaceutical companies. Forbidden from negotiating with the pharmaceutical companies. You get that? It's illegal. They have to pay full retail, and that is whatever the drug company says it is, period. Well, you know, Canada didn't do that. Canada did the same thing the Pentagon does. I mean, they've got a single-payer healthcare system up there. There's one giant purchaser of pharmaceuticals. And so everybody gets these incredible deals. And so the naughty here in this is the Food and Drug Administration, the FDA, for rejecting the reimportation of American drugs that are shipped up to Canada and then shipped back to the United States on safety grounds, despite its own officials admitting there's never been safety problems with the drugs. I mean, where are the dead Canadians? Right? I mean, isn't this just, like, obvious? If Canadian drugs are so dangerous, where are all the dead Canadians? As the Knight Ridder newspaper chain reported in an article by Tony Pugh, FDA lacks examples of Canadian drugs harming Americans. Although they've been warning Americans about the dangers of prescription drugs from Canada for nearly a year, U.S. FDA officials can't name a single American who's been injured or killed by drugs bought from licensed Canadian pharmacies. We don't have that, said Tom McGinnis, the FDA's Director of Pharmacy Affairs. I can't think of one thing off the top of my head where somebody died or somebody got put in the hospital because of these medications. I just don't know if there's anything like that. Neither does Canada, says Knight Ridder. Health Canada, which regulates Canada's prescription industry, quote, does not have any information that would indicate that any Americans have ever become ill or died as a result of taking prescription medicines purchased from Canada, says Jarena Vilk, a spokeswoman for Health Canada. But the cons in Congress, dancing at the end of the strings held by the puppet master drug companies and Bill Frist's family and friends, are saying, oh no, we can't have this, we can't have this, it's wrong for the government to negotiate with drug companies and get better prices, unless it's the Pentagon. It's wrong! As the Toronto Star article by Luke Eric Peterson, U.S. takes aim at cheaper drugs. And this is the Canadians writing about this. Dennis Hastert, the Republican Speaker of the House of Representatives, has lobbied the White House to use international trade rules to challenge Canada's price controls. You get this? Newt Gingrich wants, Dennis Hastert wants to use WTO rules, the World Trade Organization, the General Agreement on Tariff and Trades, NAFTA, he wants to use our international trade treaties to stop Americans. This is the free trade guy, right? To stop Americans from buying products in Canada for which they have prescriptions and which are perfectly legal and safe. Now, why would he want to stop Americans from buying drugs in Canada? Could it have something to do with all the money that the pharmaceutical industry gives to him, do you think? In fact, as the article goes on to say,
Dennis Hastert has lobbied the White House to use international trade rules to challenge Canada's price controls, which are administered by our patented Canada's patented medicine prices review board. It's something that the pharmaceutical industry has been pushing for years. And they point out the Bush administration is actually going after other companies where pharmaceuticals are less expensive. Australia, they point out in this article, which has some of the lowest drug prices of any developed country, less than half those of the United States, is currently in the Bush administration's crosshairs. We're going after them. We're going to take them down. How dare they? Bush has warned Australian Prime Minister John Howard that U.S. consumers feel they get a, quote, raw deal, end quote, because they shoulder more of the pharmaceutical industry's global research costs through high U.S. drug prices. Well, what about their marketing costs, which exceed their research costs? What about their profits that are close to their research costs? What about their CEO salaries? What, I mean, you just, come on, guys. Business is business, so you can't have it both ways. If you want to have competition in the marketplace, you have competition in the marketplace. But in order to do that, you have to have a fair marketplace. And you don't have a fair marketplace, number one, when you've got a very small number of very large corporations that control it. And number two, when they then go to the people who write the rules, the referees, the ones who define the game. It's like, can you imagine a hockey game if there were no rules and no referees? Well, that's what these guys are trying to do. They're trying to say, we, and there's only going to be one team. And guess who's going to win? And so they're going to the guys who are writing the rules, that is Congress, and saying, hey, you guys, you're in our pocket now. You write the rules for us. And tell Canada and Australia they can't do that anymore. Amazing. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Quick question. Ever had a cold that only lasted 4 hours? Anybody? Then why take a 4-hour cold medicine? Instead, take Aleve Cold and Sinus. One pill has the strength to give you 12 hours of relief. No stuffy nose, no throbbing head, all day. So what's it gonna be? 12 hours of relief or symptoms that interrupt your day? Do I really need to ask?
Try non-drowsy Aleve Cold and Sinus. One pill, 12 hours of relief. Use as directed.
If you think people are more important than corporations, you need to see the Progressive Populist. Twice a month, we feature columnists such as Jim Hightower, Molly Ivins, and other plutocrat pluckers from around the country. We'll send you a free sample copy if you'll call us toll-free 1-800-205-7067 or see our website at populist.com. That's 1-800-205-7067 or populist.com for the Progressive Populist, the newspaper for Main Street USA.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
First appearance of Superman in Action Comics number 1, $400,000. First appearance of Batman in Detective Comics number 27, $350,000. First appearance of Spider-Man in Amazing Fantasy 15, $50,000. Listening to that comic book show and envisioning two fat guys in tights, priceless.
Listen to that comic book show Sundays from 9 p.m. to 10 Eastern on the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, your animalogical super information highway about pets. Every Saturday and Sunday, we take your calls, help you with your pets, give away some prizes, and talk to celebrities like, from Eight Is Enough, Dick Van Patten.
I've been listening to your show. It's fascinating. It's very interesting.
We're nuts, aren't we?
I can see why people would call you up. You really know what you're talking about. It's terrific. Very, very informative.
Uh-oh, we got him on the wrong channel.
Animal Talk, Saturday noon to 2, Sunday 7 to 9 p.m. on the IE America Radio Network.
The Tom Hartman Show.
We have Bob in Texas. It's called Bob. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
You know, it's just wonderful to hear your show. I got the Sirius Satellite Radio because of this channel, and your show is worth every cent of it.
Well, thank you.
It's really nice to hear a radio show that, for one thing, you don't have to throw things at, you know, after a little while. You're talking about ideas and about historical context of what's going on, and that's so important. You don't hear this kind of intellectual, this level of thought anywhere else on the radio, and I sure appreciate it. But the big thing I keep worrying about is we have to, I mean, I think Al Franken's right in that we have to, we've been taking it and we've been taking it, and they've slimed us for so many years, and we can't take it anymore.
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Tom Hartman, Sheepwalker, in our chat room, asked the question, where is that photograph of the signing of the Medicare bill with George Bush and all those guys standing around it and all the little boxes showing the amounts that each one of them was paid off by the healthcare industry or the pharmaceutical industry? And it's at the American Progress website, AmericanProgress.org. And One of the really important things to remember here is that we are not without power. This is such an important, you know, learned helplessness is such a terrible and tragic thing. It's time for us to seize our power. We have not been using our power, but we are not without power. America has gone through a whole series of revolutions, as it were. The suffrage movement, the abolition movement, the civil rights movement, the movement to end the war in Vietnam. You go back to the Civil War and the American Revolution. There's been a whole progressive populist movement rolling back the abuses of many of the abuses of the Gilded Age. They grab a little, you know, the cons come in and they grab what they can, and then the people rise up and say, "Hey, wait a minute, we've had enough," and they push back. Look at FDR and the New Deal, and I am convinced that we are standing at the threshold of another extraordinary and positive transition. There are so many people who are so outraged, so horrified by the policies that this administration has been following, and who get it. that America really, you know, there is an ideal here. There is a positive vision here that we have held for hundreds of years. No, we haven't been perfect all the time. Certainly not. We've, you know, if you want a list of the crimes of America, we can come up with a long one. But if you want a list of the good things that America's done, you can come up with a long one also. And we can't forget that in 1989, when 15,000 Chinese people marched in Tiananmen Square, many of them to their death, many of them to their imprisonment, they were carrying a 36-foot-tall papier-mâché replica of the Statue of Liberty that they called the Goddess of Democracy, and they were quoting Thomas Jefferson. We are the archetype for the world. And by getting politically active, by getting involved, by getting out there now, you and me, getting involved, we can take this country back. We really can. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Truth and common sense in broadcasting.
It's coming from the field, but this ain't exactly real. Or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the...
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
That Doug made his confession that he used hair color.
Yeah, yes, I was expecting to make it the treatise of the last month. Aren't you guys sweet?
I would recommend sticking with one color, however, each month. You'd have
I
want to
see you try the afro stuff.
Yeah, right. I'm going to do that.
I decided that it is not the color of the hair, but the head that it stuck to that's important.
Doug Stephan's Good Day.
On the IE America Radio Network.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Michael Stinson in Los Angeles.
It doesn't matter if you're naughty or nice. If you're a prisoner in Arkansas, you will receive a gift this Christmas. Prison officials will give each of the 13,500 inmates in the state two apples, two oranges, as well as $5 on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day in a bid to make life a bit brighter for those behind bars over the holidays. The $70,000 cost for the program is paid for by prison vending machine profits and from rebates the system receives on long-distance calls placed by the inmates. The fresh fruit is donated from various U.S. orchards. For security reasons, the prison system forbids inmates' friends and relatives from sending gifts to prisoners at any time of the year, except for gift packages purchased through prison commissaries. Labor unions in the Czech Republic demanded Monday that stores stop playing Christmas carols incessantly or pay compensation for causing emotional trauma to the sales clerks. Some stores here play the same songs all day long and play them loudly. Employees say shifts have become unbearable. To listen to it for 8 hours a day is not healthy, that's for sure, said Alexander Lanier, a union leader, and for the customers, it's almost unbearable as well. Lanier said unions have written to major chains, such as Tesco, and demanded that employees be compensated. He said the unions want 500 koruna, U.S. $19, or 2 days off as a possible compensation. They've received no response. Unions in neighboring Austria have lodged similar complaints against stores there. Forget turkey and mince pies. This Christmas, Australians are being urged to serve native foods such as smoked kangaroo with wild lime and brandy sauce and wattle seed pavlova. Despite an abundance of unique fruits, nuts, and meat that have sustained the country's original Aboriginal inhabitants for centuries, Australians are only now embracing native food, with some supermarkets starting to stock Indigenous produce this year. The step to the mainstream has inspired campaigners who have struggled to get Indigenous foods onto the nation's dining tables and destroy the image of native food as simply juicy fat wachetti grubs, protein-rich bog-ong moths, and honey ants. More news after this.
I'm Oscar Davis. You may have a serious eye condition and not even know it.
Vision loss is not a normal part of aging. Some vision changes are normal. Some are due to eye disease. Do you know the difference? Open your eyes to the facts. To get more information about vision and aging, or find out about what help is available if you're having vision problems, call Lighthouse International at 1-800-829-0500 or visit www.lighthouse.org.
Holiday gift giving isn't just for people anymore, not when they can choose from the latest bling bling for their pets too. The Wall Street Journal reports Ralph Lauren is pitching Fair Isle sweaters and polo shirts for dogs. Owners can buy sterling silver pet tag from Tiffany. Kosher Pets of Fort Lauderdale, Florida offers Hanukkah collars, stuffed dreidels, and even kosher dog biscuits. Some pet owners try to get their animals into the spirit of the season, but it doesn't always work. Ken Boschert of Washington University in Seattle says his dachshunds hate it when his wife puts the antlers on them. This is Michael Stinson in Washington.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
And tonight's winning jackpot numbers are, Jane, would you do the honors?
17, 6, 39, and...
Oh, cut. You sound awful.
Oh, my nose is runny. Head's all blocked up. I need my Alka-Seltzer Plus.
Only Alka-Seltzer Plus has an effervescent formula that breaks up nasal congestion and relieves your worst cold symptoms fast.
And the numbers are, Jane...
17, 6, 39, and 75.
Alka-Seltzer Plus breaks up your worst cold symptoms fast.
Here's a novel concept. If you work full-time and do a good job, you shouldn't be paid so poorly that you live in poverty. Try to tell that to the federal government, though. An independent study released by Acorn, the grassroots advocate for the working poor, finds that corporations enjoying fat, tax-paid contracts from the feds are paying poverty wages to the people actually doing the contract work. The same federal government that sets precise standards for, say, the tensile strength of screws that it buys, sets no standards for the fair pay of people working under its contracts. The study, conducted by the Economic Policy Institute, revealed that 11% of federal contract employees receive less than a living wage, which is to say, their paychecks are too low to lift them and their families above the poverty level. In this period of economic prosperity and federal surpluses, in this period when Congress annually raises its own pay, in this period when federal contracts routinely cover the million-dollar paychecks of the corporate CEOs getting the contracts, it's absurd that our tax dollars would be used to subsidize sub-poverty pay. Ironically, while the companies profit on the backs of these workers, many of the workers themselves have to turn to food stamps, housing assistance, and other federal poverty programs just to make ends meet. This means that we taxpayers are hit with a double whammy. First, we're subsidizing low-wage companies. Then, we have to provide services to assuage the poverty of their workers. This is Jim Hightower saying, better that the contractors themselves be required to pay fair wages from the start. Which is why the Living Wage Responsibility Act has been introduced in Congress, sponsored by Representative Luis Gutierrez of Illinois. It requires big businesses that get federal contracts to pay their employees a wage no less than the federal poverty level. For more information, contact Acorn, 202-547-2500.
Brendan was spending the afternoon helping me pick out furniture for the new place.
The ladies are doing a little furniture shopping, are they?
That's scary. I hope you didn't make any choices without a professional.
Beanbag chairs for everybody.
God, help us. Bearskin rug.
I put the car in swinger, baby.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, this is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
And welcome back, friends. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, and we're We're checking out. We're checking our list, and you know, all that. Yeah, the day before Christmas. You know, after a while, that music kind of gets to you, I suppose. It is, so we'll turn it down anyhow. Naughty and Nice, number 9 in our list of 10 ways to take back America, to revive American democracy, is the point that America is not a kingdom and we don't elect kings. To turn back the imperial presidency and return the executive branch to its position co-equal with the other two branches of government, we recommend disbanding the Office of Homeland Security and requiring the president to meet weekly in open and public discussion with all members of Congress, as is done in the United Kingdom. If you've ever seen Prime Minister's Questions on C-SPAN, where Tony Blair has to deal with members of Congress, or of the Parliament in that case, and most other modern democracies are like this. Now, in that context, our naughty and nice, the nice of the CIA, actually, for writing the national intelligence estimates that National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice did not bother to read before putting inaccurate claims into the president's major national security speeches. The CIA was saying, hey, Iraq does not represent a threat to the United States. Iraq does not have uranium from Niger. Iraq does not, in all probability, have weapons of mass destruction. And Condi Rice, well, oops, I didn't read it. And naughty Condoleezza Rice for saying the government didn't have a warning about 9/11 on the same day. Now, this was the ultimate irony. The same day that Condoleezza Rice was on TV saying, oh, who could have imagined that somebody would hijack an airplane and run it into a building? On that same day, the White House is admitting that on August 6th of 2001, several months before 9/11, well, a month before 9/11, that the president got a national security advisory that Osama bin Laden was planning to hijack airplanes and fly them into buildings in New York and Washington. And what did he do with that national security finding? Well, two things. Number one, he told John Ashcroft, who immediately stopped flying on commercial aircraft, started flying only on private chartered jets. And number two, he took the longest vacation in presidential history, and when his vacation was over and they still hadn't hit the World Trade Center, he still didn't come back to Washington, D.C. He decided to go to Florida. And now, you know, the 9/11 Commission says, you know, we'd like to see that national security briefing that you received to see exactly what it says, since the White House has already admitted that it was there and that it said Saddam is coming, and he's coming with airplanes, and he's coming against Washington and New York. Since you got that on August 6th, we would like to see that. And the White House says, nope, you're going to have to sue us. You're going to have to say, we're going to stonewall this one at least through the 2004 election cycle. Come back and talk to us after November of 2004. America is not a kingdom, and we do not elect kings. This is wrong. This is plain old flat-out wrong, and we need to be speaking up about it. A few other naughty and nices here. Walter Cronkite. Walter Cronkite, marvelous. You know, a nice, definitely. Walter Cronkite. Here's Walter Cronkite talking about FDR and, you know, remembering FDR, asking Congress for the authority to declare war. Keep in mind that the, quote, war in Iraq, end quote, Bush's war in Iraq was never declared. Congress did not declare war on Iraq. We haven't declared a war since World War II, which is an absolute abdication of congressional responsibility. And here's Walter Cronkite about World War II, when we did declare a war. Whoop. Hang on just a minute. There we go. Now it should
start. It was about 12:40 p.m. when President Roosevelt finished speaking, then quickly left the rostrum on the arm of his son. Already the phrase, Day of Infamy, was acquiring a life of its own in the UP and AP wire copy. But before the war could start, one final ritual of a congressional ceremony remained, a formal declaration. Through a remarkable combination of accident and audacity, it would be a ritual the entire country would be able to eavesdrop on.
Remarkable, eh? Walter Cronkite. One of my role models, I would say, when I was young, I spent 7 years doing radio news, and an amazing man. And now he has come back with a new column. He's writing a column, a regular newspaper column, and it's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. So Walter Cronkite, he's the one who's nice, and our naughty that goes up on the other side of that, Ann Coulter, for continuing to pump out. Well, here's her description of her new book and what it's all about.
It's about the 50-year history of treachery of the Democratic Party.
Treachery!
Of the Democratic Party becoming a refuge for traitors, for Soviet spies in the 50s, and on to defeats in Vietnam, losing confidence to communism, being
losing.
Completely wrong through 8 years.
Wrong!
Of race, and now back to their old tricks again in the war
old
on terror.
Old tricks, yes. Oh, what is it? It's just a great quote here from this sadly vitriolic person. Liberals hate America. They hate flag wavers. They hate abortion opponents. They hate all religions except Islam post 9/11. Even Islamic terrorists don't hate America like liberals do. I would suggest Ann Coulter is suffering from what is called projection in the world of psychology, which is where one assumes that others have the emotions and worldview that one is stuck with. Speaking of which, let me just share with you a little bit of a reading. This is from Joe McPherson's website, zenpickle.com. Joe has worked with us on this program for quite some time. Good guy. Speaking of Ann Coulter, I'm going to read you this and then tell you what it is and what Joe did with it, because it's brilliant. The liberals were too clever to allow a simultaneous attack to be made on the whole of their press. No one section functioned as cover for the other, while the alternative newspaper, in a most despicable manner possible, reviled everything that was sacred, furiously attacking the state and government and incited certain classes of the community against each other. The national papers, also in liberal hands, knew how to camouflage themselves as model examples of objectivity. They studiously avoided harsh language, knowing well that blockheads are capable of judging only by external appearances and never able to penetrate to the real depth and meaning of anything. They measure the worth of an object by its exterior and not by its content. This form of human frailty was carefully studied and understood by the liberal press. Let me continue. See if you know who wrote this. And it's not that. I mean, you read Ann Coulter's book, and it's by means of the liberal press, the liberals spread the colossal falsehood about American militarism throughout the world and tried to inculpate America by every possible means, while at the same time the Democratic Party refused to assent to the measures that were necessary for the adequate training of our national defense forces. The appalling crime thus committed by these people ought to have been obvious to everybody who foresaw that in case of war, the whole nation would have to be called to arms, and that because of the mean huckstering of these noble representatives of the people, as they called themselves, millions of Americans would have to face enemies ill-equipped and insufficiently trained. The author of this piece goes on to say, "What soon gave me cause for very serious consideration were the activities of the liberals in certain branches of life, into the mystery of which I penetrated little by little. Was there any shady undertaking, any form of foulness, especially in cultural life, in which at least one liberal did not participate? On putting the probing knife carefully to that kind of abscess, one immediately discovered, like a maggot in a putrescent body, a little liberal who was often blinded by the sudden light. In my eyes, the charge against liberalism became a grave one the moment I discovered the liberal activities in the press, in the arts, in literature, and the theater. All unctuous protests were now more or less futile. One needed only to look at the posters announcing the hideous productions of the cinema and theater and study the names of the authors who were highly lauded there in order to become permanently adamant on liberal questions. Here was a pestilence, a moral pestilence, with which the public was being infected." In chapter 6 of this book, This kind of propaganda influenced men in such a way as to give them a taste for reading the liberal press and prepare their minds for its teachings. That press, in its turn, was a vehicle of the spoken word rather than the written word. Whereas in the liberal elite camp, professors and learned writers, theorists and authors of all kinds made attempts at talking. In the liberal media camp, real speakers often made attempts at writing. And it was precisely the liberal who was most prominent there in general and because of his shrewd dialectical skill and his knack of twisting the truth to suit his own purposes. And chapter 15, titled A Right to Self-Defense. The events which happened subsequent to 9/11 in America prove how the hope of securing the clemency of the terrorists by making a voluntary submission had the most disastrous influence on the political views and conduct of the broad masses. Seeing that the direction of our historical destiny after the war was now openly controlled by the liberals, it is impossible to admit that a defective knowledge of the state of affairs was the sole cause of our misfortunes. On the contrary, that conclusion must be drawn from the facts that our people were intentionally driven to ruin. If we examine it from this point of view, we shall find that the direction of the nation's foreign policy was not so foolish as it appeared. For one scrutinized the matter closely, we see clearly that this conduct was a procedure which had been calmly calculated, shrewdly defined, and logically carried out in service of the liberal idea and the liberal endeavor to secure the mastery of the world. Mike in Washington, D.C., who do you think wrote that?
Couldn't be Ms. Coulter, could it?
No, it isn't. It was Adolf Hitler.
Ah, well.
That was Mein Kampf with the word Jew replaced by the word liberal and the word Germany replaced by America and the burning of the Reichstag building replaced with 9/11.
Somehow it makes sense.
Yeah, but it sure does sound like Ann Coulter. I mean, it just reads just like treason. It's quite remarkable. Anyhow, Mike, we got 20 seconds here. What's up? Or I can hold you over the break if you want.
If you could, but if I could throw in something to begin with.
Sure.
The problem with Ms. Coulter is it's like the old saying, you know, if you take 10 pounds of dung and wrap it in wrapping paper, it looks nice, but it's still 10 pounds of dung.
Yeah, well, you are very good at the blunt statement, Mike. Hang on, and we'll pick you up on the other side of the break. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Talk radio for the rest of us.
My name is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and 4 pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped 5 sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine. And I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now 1-800-865-8449.
And tonight's winning jackpot numbers are... Jane, would you do the honors?
17, 6, 39, and...
Oh, cut. You sound awful.
Oh, my nose is runny. Head's all blocked up. I need my Alka-Seltzer Plus.
Only Alka-Seltzer Plus has an effervescent formula that breaks up nasal congestion and relieves your worst cold symptoms fast.
And the numbers are... Jane?
17, 6, 39, and 75.
Alka-Seltzer Plus breaks up your worst cold symptoms fast.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Get things in my mind, and I say, let's try this.
Here's Nancy in the background. Nancy.
Oh,
Nancy.
Am I on the air? Oh.
Hello.
Hello.
You're sorry you're on the air?
I'm glad I didn't say something I really shouldn't have said.
Really?
You should have heard what she was telling me a minute ago.
Wow.
Bite me, doughboy.
On the IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Hanukkah, oh Hanukkah, come light the menorah. Let's have a party, we'll all dance the horror. Gather round the table, we'll give you a treat. Dreidels to play with, latkes to eat. And while we are playing, the candles are burning low.
And welcome back. Happy Hanukkah. We're in the midst of it. Happy Kwanzaa. It's going to begin in a few days. Happy Merry Christmas tomorrow, tonight. And happy winter solstice earlier in the week. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. And we were talking with Mike in Washington, D.C. Hey, Mike, you're back on the air.
Ah, how you doing?
Good.
But, you know, as I was saying about Ms. Coulter, it's a pity that such a glamorized exterior conceals such a horrid and just corrosive interior. It's really
I've seen her on TV a couple of times, and I feel sorry for her. She must be one of those persons who just lives in a lot of pain, you know, because she just is spilling it out all the time on other people. It's
you know,
if we're going to bring about change, Mike, in the world, and I really, you know, I believe in the old notion of tikkun, you know, the idea that we are each born into this world with an obligation to do what we can to heal the world.
Right.
And if we're going to do that, I don't think that we accomplish as much by villainizing people as we do by acknowledging their humanity and moving on beyond their crimes and getting to what our agenda is. You know, rather than, you know, in other words, rather than us sitting here spending 10 minutes talking about, you know, what a nasty person Ann Coulter is, you know, let's identify the toxicity there, certainly. And there is a clear toxicity, and it's unfortunate. But then let's identify the positive vision that we want to hold.
True. The thing
what's
is,
that
you,
for
know,
you?
We should be focusing on trying to heal our very desperately injured society, in my opinion, rather than hurling epithets at one another.
Yeah, you know, I absolutely.
There comes a time to start bailing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's time to try and get the ship floating. It's going down. It is necessary to, you know.
So what are you doing to do that? What are you doing, pardon my putting you on the spot here, but or what do you see people doing around you to bring about that kind of change?
Well, people are organizing. People are talking to each other, which is a novelty.
Yeah, it actually is. I mean, this George Bush has been a real blessing in some ways to American democracy in that he has brought people together in a way. I mean, Bill Clinton led two of the major assaults on American democracy, two, in my opinion, crimes against democracy, signing WTO and GATT, and or rather GATT and NAFTA, and signing the Telecommunications Act of 1996. And nobody talked about that, you know, because he was this nice guy and he was very charming and he got in trouble for, you know, Monica and all this stuff. And everybody felt sympathy. But, you know, George Bush has just ripped the mask off the conservative agenda, which
Correct.
Clinton was dancing to in part, and shown it for what it is.
And
I think we owe him some thanks for
unfortunately,
that.
Unfortunately, you know, people forget we need to get back essentially, you know, my idea of the idealized America are the old values that were epitomized in old New England, with the town meeting, with people actually participating in their government.
Yeah, yeah. And what's amazing to me is, you know, we have Bernie Sanders on here every Friday afternoon, more or less, and he says, you know, members of Congress actually respond. It's just amazing to him how rarely people ever contact him. And or, you know, call him or say or organize a meeting and invite him to come. By the way, the phone number for the United States Capitol, area code 202-224-3121. And there's, you know, you can get voicemail, if nothing else, and leave messages. It's important for us to get active. It's important for us to contact our elected representatives. It's important for us to participate in political activity and political campaigns. Mike, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Always nice to hear from you. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Exposing the con in conservatives. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Didn't think you could still get union-made clothing in America? Well, think again. It's here, now, and just a mouse click away at www.nosweatshop.com, the world's first shopping mall that doesn't sell clothing made in sweatshops. At nosweatshop.com, there's jeans and oxfords, sweats and hoodies, fleece jackets and sports bras, caps, scarves, and more. You can get great quality, support good jobs, and pay a fair price. You can't stretch a buck any further than that. Nosweatshop.com. A better world is just a mouse click away.
Hi, this is Shar Jones, Operations Department for IE America Radio Network. Please be safe this holiday season and have a happy new year.
The winter homes of migratory birds have a big impact on their well-being the next summer. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. A lot of migratory birds that spend the summer in North America are now in tropical regions keeping warm. Their long-term survival depends on having places to call home at both ends of their range. But the winter habitat of some birds has been logged or converted to pastures for cattle. Researchers say these birds might be able to find new places to live, but they'll have a harder time finding the food they need to keep healthy. Peter Mara is an ecologist with the Smithsonian Environmental Research Center in Maryland. He studied one migratory bird, the redstart, that spends the winter in Central America and on Caribbean islands. Some of the birds lived in prime habitat in mangrove swamps. Others were forced to live in less desirable habitat that was dry and scrubby. Mara says birds that spent the winter in the mangroves weighed more and produced more chicks the following summer. Mara says older male birds dominate the better habitats, and they push out females and younger males. Under normal conditions, that gives them better food in the winter and an advantage in the spring. They can start their migrations earlier and stake out prime habitat for breeding when they get home. But the natural competitiveness of the older male birds might be hard on females if they can't find enough food in the winter. And if fewer females survive the winter, the result will be more males than females in the spring, and ultimately fewer offspring.
So if males are continuing to dominate and exclude females into the poorer habitat, then females may have lower survivorship and you may end up with a male bias sex ratio. So continuing to degrade the habitats and the wintering grounds overall is going to lower the population size.
Mara says these consequences of habitat loss for birds are more evidence of the need for conservation at both ends of their migratory routes. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Anaconda.
Budgie.
Camel.
Dick Dick.
Emu.
Frog.
Gopher.
Hyena.
Iguana.
Jaguar.
Cuda Mundi.
Llama.
Minx.
Animal
Narwhal.
Talk. We talk Australia. About what you do to your animals and what your animals do to you. Mark, Donna, and Dr. Brad answer all your animal questions from A to Z. Sunday nights on IE America Radio Network. Penguin.
Whale.
Rooster.
Seal.
Tortoise.
Vampire bat.
This is Mike Malloy with the IE America Radio Network. Want to know more about our talk shows and personalities but don't know where to look? Do you want to find out what guests are scheduled or what topics we'll be discussing on our programs? Would you like to participate in live chat or vote in interactive polls? All this and more is available at the IE America Radio website. Bookmark it. Stop surfing and get active. Visit www.ieamericaradio.com today.
Best of the rest of the news, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Oh, I am just a student, sir, and only want to learn. But it's hard to read through the rising smoke from the books that you like to burn. So I'd like to make a promise, and I'd like to make a vow, that when I've got something to say, sir, I'm gonna say it now. Oh, you've given me a number and you've taken off my name. To get around this campus, why, you almost need a plane. And you're supporting Chiang Kai-shek while I'm supporting Mao. So when I've got something to say, sir, I'm gonna say it now.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman. That's Phil Oakes. And here we are on the air and live. It's 30 years ago today. 30 years ago today, I was standing by a telephone. Well, actually, it would have been later on in the evening, but standing by a telephone in St. Mary's Hospital in Livonia, Michigan, in Detroit, suburban Detroit, calling my parents in Lansing to tell them that that Louise had just given birth to our first child, our daughter Kendra. And I, as I was telling them, I started sobbing. It was just the mystery, the extraordinary, the wonder of it was just amazing. And so I want to say happy birthday to my daughter Kendra today, her 30th birthday, a big one. Michael in Kansas City has called 1-800-TALK. Yes, our number 1-800-825-5937. Hey, Michael, welcome to the program.
Yeah, good afternoon, Tom. Listen,
hey.
I was rather moved about what you said about Ann Coulter. And, you know, I was thinking, you know, I spent a lot of energy hurling invectives at the television set at this one.
Yeah.
And I realized, what is the use of that? So what I did is I finally lost my mind and went down to the Dean campaign headquarters, and I'm, you know, down there two nights a week on the telephone.
Yeah. Yeah, see, that's the appropriate response.
Right.
I mean, that is the healthy response.
And I felt better about myself.
Yeah.
You know, I was telling my mother today, you know, God, I hate these people. And she's like,
yeah.
No, you can't hate these people. You know, you got to do something constructive. I was like, oh, yeah, I am. That's right. You know,
see,
so sometimes.
Yeah, and see, Michael, it's as you're demonstrating, it's not just happy talk. I mean, it's absolutely not happy talk. There are times when anger and hatred are appropriate, if somebody is torturing your family in front of you or something, I mean, you know, when you
right,
need the
yeah.
adrenaline
there's
to
a,
be able to break the bonds and engage in battle, I mean, then it's necessary. But by and large, it is toxic and it harms the person experiencing it far more than it does the person to whom they're directing it. So,
right.
I think that our response to use George Bush's word, evil in this world, or our response to the psychopathology, to use the
right.
The word of my field, would be to recognize it, to label it, to offer solutions to it, and to work aggressively to bring those solutions about. Just very straightforward. And that's how things get done in America.
That's right. And down at headquarters, it's amazing who you meet down there and how we talk. And it's like a, you know, community meet down there every you know, twice a week for me. And you'd be amazed at the people that walk in off the street to that campaign headquarters, and maybe some others too, you know, maybe Kucinich and Clark's campaign. People walk in and they're going, you know, I've never done a thing in my life in a political campaign. What can I do to help you people? Or for that,
yeah,
well,
that's exactly
get on the
what's
phone.
Happening.
You know?
Yeah, that's exactly what's happening with all of the campaigns of the Democrats
right.
now, is except perhaps Joe Lieberman. I don't know.
Right, yeah.
But is that, you know, people are coming in going, hey, you know, we, you know, enough. It's time for us to get active.
But I think there is hope for the world in that way.
Yeah, good. Hey, Michael, what are you doing on that campaign? I'm just curious. I've never been inside I've been inside the Dean headquarters here in Burlington, but, you know, it was just for a meeting with Joe Trippi, just a little bit of time there. So I don't have I've never worked inside one of those things. What was it like?
It's in the Santa Fe headquarters, it's real informal. You know, I go in there and I volunteer twice a week to do phone banking. And I go in there, and there's a telephone there sitting for me, and they have a list of people that are three times primary voters that we call for to see if they want to participate in the caucus. And so I go down a list of like 40, 50 people a night and call them and tell them about how the caucus works in New Mexico and what's happening. And I just stay, you know, sit there 2 hours on the phone just going down the phone list calling people, and, you know, you get abuse. I call up Democrats, and they're like, I'm for Bush. I'm like, oh, okay, you know, and I don't argue with anything, but you get hung up on, you get people calling you traitors, you get all kinds of stuff hurled at you, and the thing is not to hurl that back, you know. And,
that's
and
right.
It's so I'm doing telephone banking, and I think that's the simplest thing that someone who hasn't been involved in politics before can do that is somewhat kind of non-threatening if you're good on the phone. And we do things like canvassing and also events. You know, we set up tables at, like, you know, the Veterans for Peace events and things like that, and meet the public like that. So that's basically what I'm doing down there.
That's marvelous, Michael. I salute you.
Okay,
I salute
thanks.
You. You are the shock troops on the ground there.
Right.
I absolutely salute you. Thank you. Thanks for the call.
All right. Bye.
And you're well. You're bye now. And thanks for doing the great work that you're doing. And you know, with any campaign, anybody out there participating. Okay, Naughty and Nice here, our Christmas special, our naughty in the media, looking at the, you know, the news anchors in the media. Bill O'Reilly, here's a little clip from his interview with Terry Gross, played with the permission of her producer.
I'll read what the People magazine thinks.
Why read it? Why read it?
Because I want people to hear it.
Why?
Because it.
Why?
You'll hear when I'm done. Why?
I'm getting a feeling in this interview, all right, that this is just a hatchet job on me, all right, and I don't like it. Now, there's no reason for you to read that People magazine.
Go on the attack.
If they want to read it, they can go and read it.
No, but this isn't the review of the book. It's the review of how you handled it. And I think it's okay to ask you to be accountable for the things.
Accountable
that you said.
For what? You know, I came on this program to talk about who's looking out for you. And what you have done is thrown every kind of defamation you can in my face. All right, did you do this to Al Franken?
Did you?
Did you challenge him on what he said?
We had a different interview.
Yeah, a different interview. Okay, fine. Fresh air? Is this what fresh air is?
Yeah. See, the pit bull, the frankly rather pathetic attack strategy. Our naughty Bill O'Reilly for today, and our nice and really nice. I mean, this is just extraordinary. Somebody who addresses the same issues to probably an equally sized I don't know the size of his audience, but in any case, you know, out there on cable TV every day, every night. Replayed every day. And John Stewart, doing just an absolutely great job. Here's a little clip from The Daily Show.
Since the beginning of all this, weapons of mass destruction, regime change, pockets of resistance, targets of opportunity business, it's been difficult to have an honest discussion about the direction President Bush is taking this country. In fact, when you combine the new mandate that criticizing the commander-in-chief is off limits in wartime with last year's official disbanding of the Democratic Party, well, we're left at an all-time low in the good old-fashioned honest debate category. Now, I know you're thinking, but John, every time I want to have a calm, honest discussion about these kinds of issues, I'm shouted down and harassed by the Dixie Chicks and their ilk.
So, the use of comedy and humor to defuse an issue and yet to make a point, to make it, and doing it so well. Congratulations to John Stewart and The Daily Show and all of his much-deserved success. Another one of our nices that goes along with that in the public eye is Joe Wilson. Joe Wilson, whose wife, Valerie Plame, was outed because Joe Wilson had the courage to stand up and say, no, George Bush is lying to you about the uranium in Niger, and publish that in the New York Times. And then they wiped out his wife's career and perhaps the lives of other CIA agents. They won't let us investigate it and find out. It's been buried here by John Ashcroft. But this Karl Rove's comment on this.
At the end of the day, it's of keen interest to me to see whether or not we can get Karl Rove frog marched out of the White House in handcuffs.
163 days since Karl Rove, or felon unknown in the White House, senior administration official, committed treason. But perhaps Rove.
And trust me, when I use that name, I measure my words.
Yeah, so Wilson is pretty sure it's Karl Rove. It certainly makes sense. And so our kudos to Joe Wilson. Well done. Also, the movie Unprecedented. If you haven't seen this, you can, you know, there are copies floating around. You can order it on Amazon.com and, or, you know, whatever, your local bookstore, video store. This is the story. I'll just give you a little clip from this of what really happened in Florida in November of 2000.
Statewide, we had complaints of everything from police intimidation, police threatening people with tickets for loitering who happen to be standing in line. We've had reports of people being required to produce multiple pieces of identification when they have a valid voter registration card. There's no such requirement under Florida law.
Many more irregularities were confirmed when the NAACP held hearings a few days after the election.
I showed the poll worker my identification. And he looked at the roll, and he looked at me, and he said, "We have a problem. You're not on the roll." I did nothing wrong. I voted in this county. There's no reason why I should not have been on that roll, but I was not on that roll, and I was not allowed to vote.
These irregularities were reported throughout the state.
Yeah, and it turns out now we learn, and this movie does a brilliant job of documenting it, this movie Unprecedented, that some 70,000 people, principally African Americans, were denied the right to vote in Florida, overwhelmingly in Democratic districts. And this, more than anything else, threw the election close enough that the Supreme Court could do the little hat trick that they did and give it to George W. 1-800-TALK, yes, our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Armin in Florida is on the line. Hey, Armin, happy holidays. Merry Christmas, happy Hanukkah, happy Kwanzaa, whatever's appropriate for you. Hope you're having a good one.
Well, merry politically correct you, too.
Thank you. It's tough, you know.
I know.
Yeah. So.
No, I had a really nice debate at a local shopping mall with a young gentleman that's majoring in philosophy and religious studies. And I tried to encourage him to have an open mind and to seek out other information. And basically, I was, you know, trying to get him to turn off the mainstream media propaganda and turn on his brain.
Mm-hmm. Always a good idea.
Pardon me, please?
Always a good idea. A good suggestion.
And what do you think? I've listened to Howard Dean, and he seems to impress upon me as a serious person that I don't think he's trying to become the president for, you know, selfish reasons. I think the guy is really sincere. And I was sitting there thinking, comparing him to what W is, you know, or isn't. And I think basically there's a clear comparison that I think almost anybody could see if they could access the information. And
this is why the Republicans are so afraid of Howard Dean, that they're running attack ads against him in Iowa.
So soon, right.
Yeah,
so,
I mean,
so that tells
they do not want to run against him. They want to run against Joe Lieberman or some, you know, somebody that they know that they can beat.
Well, anyway, if the Dean campaign would consider it, I think the a really decent campaign motto for his, you know, challenge to acquire the presidency of the United States, I think that it's best described as he's a physician with a cause.
Yeah, and he is. Yeah, well said, Armin. Finish it.
Well, that's it, and I just want to wish everybody really, you know, it's just it's kind of a terrible time right now, I think, for our country, and you know, it's sad what's going on, and it really disturbs me. You know, I'm like Mike Malloy, you know, he's pretty ashamed, he said, of what his country's doing, but it's not really the country, it's the people that are in power, and we always must remember.
Mike's a good man, and he speaks truth.
Right.
Mike's a good man. Know. And so are you, Armin. I appreciate it. And yes, and thank you for the call. And yes, it is a difficult time. And so is childbirth. You know, I mean, difficult times produce usually the greatest transition, the greatest transformation. If you want to see change happen, have difficult times. And you will have change. If you don't want to have change, then just, you know, have everything go along as it was. And so I, you know, this administration does not intimidate me in the least. I am actually, frankly, very pleased that George Bush has been as open and blunt and blatant at doing what he has done, because I really believe that the majority of Americans are now openly horrified. Forget the polls. The polls are nonsense. Other in the education field, Arnaudia, nice author David Eggers, the guy who wrote a heartbreaking work of staggering genius, which was getting all these great reviews. I got a copy of it. I tried to read it, and I couldn't. It must have been too staggering for my genius or whatever. I mean, his genius was more staggering than mine. I couldn't get through it. But apparently, it was a good book, and he has now started this program, 826 Valencia. Eggers and about 400 volunteers teach writing and comics creation, run workshops on SAT preparation, and help kids launch student publications. They deploy 20 to 30 tutors at a time into classrooms at the request of teachers for one-on-one work in student writing. So he's actually changing things. He's actually getting out there and being active, and he's also one of the leaders working hard to push the Bush administration to preserve the AmeriCorps. The naughty side of this is the Texas School Board. We're rejecting a widely used environmental textbook, in part for claiming that there was a scientific consensus. This, the textbook says, there's a scientific consensus for global warming and speaks well of solar energy. And so the Texas School Board rejects this book, and the board threw out the formal review of the book, relying instead on a report by the ultra-conservative Texas Public Policy Foundation, saying the authors claim that air travel has, quote, an increasingly high environmental cost, makes bin Laden, Osama bin Laden, into a hero of sorts for discouraging air travel in the United States and elsewhere, end quote. The Texas School Board held hostage by right-wing cranks and fanatics. And what's particularly sad and ironic about this is that as Texas goes, so goes the rest of the nation, because the school book, Texas is such a large purchaser of school books that the publishers have to, you know, whatever Texas wants, Texas gets, and the rest of the country gets it as well. It's a real shame. But education is an absolute human right, and it's a necessary thing in a democracy. We need to be working for it and fixing things like this problem. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Welcome and good evening. Soon, one of these lucky ladies will be crowned Miss Kumquat of Monroe County. The envelope, please. Miss Debbie Andrews. I have good news.
I can't believe I won.
You didn't.
Huh?
I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
You know, you ought to check your credit report.
But I just don't have time.
I have to clean out the garage.
And take the kids to the doctor.
And balance my checkbook.
And take the dog to the vet.
And mow the lawn.
And do the grocery shopping. And call the
bank. Stop. If you haven't checked your credit report, there's a fast, easy solution. Log on to freecreditreport.com and we'll show you how to find out online what's in your credit report. And get 30 days of our credit check monitoring service free. So don't say,
I'm just too busy.
Log on to freecreditreport.com today.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. Congress. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
The Mike Molloy Show.
According to the GAO report, many items needed to establish a laboratory for making biological warfare agents were being sold on the Internet to the public from the Department of Defense's excess property inventory for pennies on the dollar. So the next time the Bush crime family says, well, it's time to invade, let me close my eyes, spin me around, let me point, Syria, because they have weapons of mass destruction.
This is so much fun. Spin me around again. Iran! Oh, I love this game! Uncle Dick, can I play this game so much?
The next time we do that, is it not incumbent upon us to ask where they got the equipment that they used to make weapons of mass destruction?
Fast Tag says $27 billion. It's yours for $1.29.
The Mike Molloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
What do you think I like about communing with nature as much as I do, being on the tractor as much time as I do, or spending time with the animals?
Spitting diesel into the ozone layer? You're at one with nature.
You have meddled with the primal forces of nature, and you will atone.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Zone. This is Tom Hartman helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. We are doing our naughty and nice for Christmas here, going through the list of in the different areas of our lives, of our world, who's doing well and who's out of control. And our next one is the environment. Before I get to that, though, just let me tell you, our program today was produced by Louise Hartman here in Vermont. The music was engineered or edited by Brad Walrod in New York City. And thanks to Shar Jones for showing up on Christmas Eve and engineering our program brilliantly, as always, in Detroit, Michigan. Thanks to the folks in the chat room for sharing the afternoon with us. It's always wonderful to see you there and to get feedback from you and hear your thoughts and to converse with you during the breaks. Thank you very much. Okay. Naughty and nice. Nice trees. They make the world a more beautiful place. They provide sound buffers for large urban areas. They reduce utility bills. Using them as windbreaks, they can give you 10 to 20% cooling in hot climates and 20 to 30% heating reduction of heat necessary in cold climates. They reduce flooding by intercepting rainfall. They produce a sense of rootedness in community. They clean the air. They remove dust particles, absorb ozone, carbon monoxide, sulfur dioxide, other pollutants. They soften the harsh contour building. They do all kinds of wonderful things. Trees prevent soil erosion, freshen the atmosphere. Our naughty in the environmental era or area, the Bush administration. Yeah, George Bush, for proposing his Healthy Forests initiative. As CBS News reported, quoting Sean Cosgrove, a forest expert with the Sierra Club, quote, "The timber industry fought real hard for this bill for a reason, and it's not because they want to remove brush and chaparral. Through and through, this thing is about increasing commercial logging with less environmental oversight. We have got to stand up and take this country back. And you and I, we can do it. We can do it. We have done it before. We will do it again. Thanks for joining us today. Tune in tomorrow, same time, same place.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Tia Carrera is on the front in Playboy. I think what you have done is give a little more license to people who have a few more years on them.
Probably. A few more years
No. I'm talking about now.
Like the tread on a tire.
Yeah, never mind. I can't make it better.
What I think, you couldn't possibly be any dumber. You go and do something like this.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Hi, this is Suzanne Cowardy.
I'm El Bracciotti, the famous mariachi.
Whatever.
This is